Okay, we'll start the budget session, and our treasurer will begin.
Good evening, council, members of the public. I'd like to touch just briefly on one of our revenue decision cards, property tax, and then we'll go into the state of the general fund budget for next year, the draft budget, and then we'll look at some expenditure decision cards. So first, let me hand out this spreadsheet on property tax. I think most of you have seen it. I may not have brought it up. This shows one of the draft ordinances for your consideration in regular session tonight is a property tax increase. Three options: 0% increase, 1% increase, which administration is recommending, and a 2% increase. 0% obviously there's no change. Assuming there's no change in assessed value, a 1% property tax increase for next year would be a little less than $5 a year on a typical home with assessed value of $250,000. That's what that spreadsheet kind of shows here. Share if you didn't get one. But in the upper right-hand bar there, it just says 1% increase for a $250,000 home is $4.95 per year, assuming no change in assessed value countywide. The other thing that's kind of interesting on property taxes, when you authorize a certain amount of property tax for next year, we do not collect all that money next year for 2012 taxes. Let me hand out something here on property tax. Monies we've collected this year, from prior year property tax bills. So what's going around is a look at 2004 through 2010 monies still owed the city. So on the left-hand side of that little spreadsheet, if you have it there, we had almost $145,000 of property taxes receivable, if you will. This is from the county treasurer. And then through September 30th, on the right-hand column, what's still owing from prior years is about $70,000. So we actually collected in the first 9 to 10 months about $74,000 from prior years' taxes owing. So it makes it kind of interesting to predict how much money we're going to get this year and next. I will say that through last week, for this year's property tax, we collected 99% of the budget. So we'll get a few more bucks November, December, the rest of November and December, small bucks. But hopefully we'll come in very close to this year's property tax.
Except for the most part, those are people that are late.
They're late. Yes, they are. Late.
Now, property's in foreclosure.
That could be.
Some kind of a limbo zone.
Well, I think there's two years before there's a lien? I forget what the timing is.
2 years or 3 years until the auction.
Then maybe the new property owner is paying those.
Right. And when it goes into foreclosure, the sales tax, the property tax still remains as a lien against the property.
And that's the very first thing to pay is the property tax.
Yeah, upon sale. All those back taxes have to be paid. So it's just kind of what interesting little tidbit. It makes it kind of fun to predict it. What we're actually going to collect next year. Getting to the general fund budget, let me pass out where we are as of 3:30 today. Last time we talked, we were in the black. We then had another bill for unemployment. And I'm going to pass that around as well.
That's next year's there, Paul.
So the current look on the general fund on page 2 is we're in the hole about 7,000. Now, that's a little bit different number. So last time we talked, we were in the black. And we then took another look, and we got another invoice for unemployment. It's interesting, most of these folks here left us in 2009, but we're still getting unemployment payments.
they haven't been rehired. As soon as they're rehired, it stops.
Correct. Unless they get laid off from there, we're the base period employer, so we get hit. And, you know, the reason, in the past, city employment's been fairly stable, so we went on a pay-as-you-go method of unemployment. Other companies, as you know, pay a rate every month. They pay a percentage of payroll, and that pool is used to pay unemployment. And then your experience is tested, and then you may get a different rate the next year. But we're still on a pay-as-you-go basis, and we're paying. And I expect another bill late in January that'll hit next year. That's why we adjusted that expense for next year. And then we tweaked, just today, I noticed one employee, we had two kids assigned to her. She doesn't have any kids. Ooh. So we adjusted the medical insurance downward. Her predecessor had two kids.
This is a quarterly bill?
It is. Yeah. And you can, on the back of unemployment, you can get up to 72 weeks of unemployment payments. It can be interrupted, restarted. So right now we are pretty close on the general fund, the draft. We're underwater $7,000.
And this doesn't include our recently laid off engineer?
It does include the absence of that salary for next year.
Okay.
But it does include a factor for unemployment insurance. Okay. And that also has in it a level of uniformed police officers of 17 officers for next year.
Mark, these people that are listed here on this handout, do any of them run out of benefits during 2012?
Well, we asked that from the Employment Security Department. They were very vague. I'm expecting one more bill in late January for these folks, and then we've also been notified that one of our officers that left employment, Officer Turner, is turned in for unemployment payments, as well as the laid off development engineers. We've got that notification as well.
So Officer Turner's situation, that's questionable to me.
Well, he qualified for unemployment payments. And we'll be seeing that, unless he gets hired somewhere else. Well, he's applied and been approved.
But did he resign? Did we have a letter of resignation?
He did resign.
So help me understand.
Doesn't seem to make any difference in Washington State.
Doesn't seem to make any difference in the state. You wait a little bit longer.
Solicitor resigned voluntarily.
Yeah, I've been told that there's just a longer wait period if you voluntarily.
Let me pass out these expenditure decision cards. There are two
for consideration.
Two or three more decision cards were turned in, and they did not come out of the administrator's office. They stayed in there. This is why this starts with page 4. I didn't want to redo it, you know. That's a lot of paper. So the first one, page 4, is the only because I got these in this chronologic order. Emergency response plan for the city of Ferndale. Mike Chaplin of LMR Communications, $5,000 to write a emergency response plan and procedure and training. It's a one-time thing. Page 6 is the Ferndale Community Resource Center support, $7,000. And I've included some notes there from the committees. So that's the two under consideration. 5 and 7 is $12,000. So we're underwater seven. 7, 12, 19, about $20,000 underwater. That's the state of the draft general fund budget. Anything else? Any questions?
Is Mr. Chaplin going to be here tonight to expand on his request?
No.
I think Chief Knapp is going to, though.
If Mike Chaplin may have a grant or something he's going after that this is possibly matching for? Or?
No, I'm not.
This would be separate, just standalone.
Standalone. Okay.
The attachment is kind of descriptive. It tells what he's going to do.
Now, this cost, the $5,000 cost, we sat in on a meeting with some folks who were proposing writing the plan for the city, and their costs were substantially higher than this. I think because Mike Chaplin's involvement with the city and the police department in particular, he has a lot of the baseline information that others would need to go out and find. He's been involved in helping to design and equip the EOC up at our police department. And as you know, he's best known for putting together the communications van for the police department. So he not only has an intimate knowledge of the police department, but also communications in general and WATCOM and all the county emergency management operations. So I know talking with the chief, he was stating just how important this plan is. Right now we have a very generic plan. We have that template that we adopted that is just kind of a standard national incident response template, but it's really nothing specific to the city. On the standpoint of emergencies, Public Works pretty much has the floods nailed down. They've done this every year. They do it every year, and they do it very well. But this would deal with, you know, the proverbial earthquakes and tsunamis and lahars and all the things like that that are perhaps less likely but certainly could happen, depending on how long you live, probably certain to happen. But I know that the chief was very happy that this cost came in as low as it was given the alternatives that we were considering.
So is this, do we want to discuss the medical proposal now?
Oh, yeah, we could. This is something outside of this. As you're aware, we finished our negotiations with the police guild earlier this year, and we're currently negotiating with the two machinist groups, our planners and our police lieutenants. It's a small group, but it's the group that's up this year. The Teamsters, their contract rolls over at the end of next year. But one of the things where we've talked about with the machinists, and later on tonight, when actually after the meeting, we need to go into executive session, talk about the non-represented wage proposals for 2012. One thing you'll see included in that, and one thing that we're talking to the machinists about right now, is the idea that if on a voluntary basis any employee was to decide to switch their coverage or medical coverage from Regions to group health. Group health has a much lower premium, and it's a different type of medical plan. But if they were to switch over, we would share the premium savings. We would give the employees 40% of the savings. That 40-60 split is identical to what we currently provide most everyone if they actually opt out, if they have a spouse that has insurance and therefore the city's insurance is duplicitous. If they opt out and say, no, thank you, I don't want the insurance coverage at all, we split the total premium 60-40. So this would just be a hybrid off of that, whereby if they went over to the group health, we would split the premium savings 40% to them, 60% to the city, depending on the coverage. Naturally, the coverage is higher if you have a full family coverage versus an individual coverage. But for many of our employees, in fact, the majority of our employees, they do have spouse and dependent coverage. And so that 40% represents about $190 a month to them, which is a sizable amount, and by anyone's estimation.
That's the 40%.
That's the 40%.
They would take home about $200 a month.
Exactly.
But I think the gross to take home would be less taxes, less retirement, blah, blah, blah.
Right, all that. But that's the gross amount of the difference between the Regions.
But
and
the copays might go up a little bit. Is that what I heard?
Yeah, and for the police guild, we did increase the medical copay. You'll see later on tonight that there's the same increase recommended for the non-represented, and we're also currently negotiating an increase with the machinist groups on the copay increase. The Teamsters, remember, has one more year. So this year, 2012, the Teamsters copay goes up to $75, which is what the police guild actually matched as well and went up to.
And that's not the doctor visit copay. This is
right.
The premium share copay.
So if the premium, right. Each month, let's say that the city pays $500 for the insurance premium. Under the agreement, each month the employee would pay $75 of that $500 monthly premium. So it's a monthly medical coverage premium employee share, as opposed to the $10 copay when you actually go in to see the doctor that you pay that time of visit. So it's a different situation. It's been a way for us to partially defray some of the premium costs while giving some surety to the employees as to exactly how much it was. Years ago we talked about what if they pick up 10% or 20%, but 10% or 20% of what? So we rolled over to a fixed dollar amount. And again, that for 2012 for the Teamsters and for the Guild and perhaps for others, it's going to go up to $75. So there'd be a $75 monthly contribution from the employees towards their medical premiums. And then if they separately decided to switch over to group health rather than regions, they would get 40% of that premium difference between the regions and the group health. So that is something that, even though it's voluntary, we ran the numbers just to see. What if everyone in the city did it? As our finance director noted, you do have increased retirement and Social Security and things like that. It ends up, we get about a 60 to 63,000, right around in there. So a little bit north of $60,000 is what the city would save for the year if everyone in the city went to this voluntary program.
General fund.
And the general fund. That's the general fund.
So currently, now, how many people?
Just before they ask you questions, because you're missing a really important point. I'm sure you got their attention with $62,000 in savings to our budget, but
it went up.
The unions that are currently under contract have to voluntarily agree to do a limited opener of their contract. We think, with a tremendous amount of work by Sam and Mark, is that we've done charts to show them that this really is not a giant effect for each employee. And we have those charts showing who the doctors are, how the coverage is, how the comparison, but it's a giant savings to switch from one coverage to the other
right.
coverage.
Yes.
I'm not supposed
yes.
to say names, but
right.
you,
yeah.
you
so,
could say that. So, let me finish.
Hmm?
That's the factor here, is that never been done, but it's not to say it can't be done, is to ask all of our union representatives, we would like to sit down and present this plan to you, because let's face it, 62,000, it's over 62,200 and something.
Pretty close.
Is an amazing difference in our budget, and this is the timing for it. I think that hopefully, looking on some real wood to knock on, that the unions would agree that this is a pretty serious time and this is a significant savings to our city.
Yeah, just today I reached out to the Teamsters and the Guild and asked them if they would consider a limited opener, as the mayor said. Now, they could come back and say, no, thank you, we're very happy with our agreement, or they could come back and say, yeah, let's talk about this. They could even come back and say, let's talk about this and other things. I mean, you can reopen with the mutual agreement any contract at any time on any issue, but it's not necessarily something that you do very often, just because you normally set these contracts in place and there's an expectation that of what's going to be happening. But we did reach out today, so we'll be hearing back from them. And as I mentioned, we're currently negotiating with the machinist groups, those two small groups. And we'll just have to see how that negotiation plays out.
Mr. Hansen first, then I'll go to Lloyd.
And my own personal health insurance supplement that I'm on, each year there's a reopening. Each year it seems that a different health agency is the better deal. I have to stay with the same one year after year, but I did notice that this year I would be better off with a different health insurance and a different dental plan than I was last year. And I get that opportunity at least once a year, or only once a year. Is there a guarantee of this difference?
No. No, the numbers we're giving them are for 2012. Because we do have the rates set, and they only set the rates, as you know,
one year. I would advise very strongly stuck with some. You understand where I'm coming from?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So there's the concern from, you know, the city standpoint, also the employee standpoint. And one of the things we're talking about is that should the employee wish to revert back to the current negotiated plan, in this case Regents, they would be able to do that.
Is Regents open at any time?
Once a year.
Yes.
Okay. So you'll know at the end of next year.
Exactly.
There should be a phrase in there that allows.
Right. Yeah, they have open period enrollments, and that is usually
followed. You make a very good point. I'm not so sure unions don't like that clause, but there are some contracts that allow you every year to renegotiate the lower plan, but it's way more complicated than just saying that because the plans are so different. I mean, going through medical plans is an extensive endeavor.
I understand that, but we're looking at a one-time advantage of group health in the region.
Correct.
Right.
Next year, the advantage could be no longer there.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
True.
And still, unless they negotiate away that right, they have, again, you would do the same thing, say, we'd like to talk to you, and they have a right to say no or yes.
Lloyd. Just some numbers here. Police Guild, about 17 in that one? People?
Yes. Okay. About that.
And the machinist unions, what's that consist of? How many? Five, six?
Oh, eight? No, the machinists, there's two Dave. Lieutenants and three planners, so five total in the machinists.
Okay. And then the Teamsters, are they up this year, or is that?
No, their contract is not open until this time next year.
But how many people are in that group normally?
They probably have 30.
Okay.
Big ish. Group. Yeah, that's our biggest group.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's two groups. There's the clerical, and then there's.
And, the, and so the numbers you said are the $63,000. So
that's
62.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just a general phone. About 35 people.
Yeah, so what that would really mean in savings, because you would be given 40% of over that, about $25,000.
Oh, no. The $60,000 is the net amount.
That's the net. Okay, right. So you add 40% on that.
And,
that's a big number.
If the Guild and or Teamsters desire to talk about this, we would bring it forward because we probably would not get it done in time for our budget adoption this year. But as you're aware, we amend the budget every month. And so that would probably be an early 2012 budget amendment to reflect how many people were interested in doing that, if any.
No, I was talking.
Councilor Smutchler? It sounds like the total premiums to the city for Regents over is about $100,000, if I'm thinking 60-40 split. And we're gonna
probably.
Say,
I didn't run all those numbers.
Couldn't we go to Regents and say, we're thinking of making a switch. We'd like to negotiate. We can get the same coverage for this.
No, the coverages are negotiated by the state.
Okay, we're not part of that.
And so they have the state bargaining power, if you will.
Okay, so another question I have, if an employee is paying out of his salary $75 a month for, you call it copay? Is that the proper term?
Yeah, medical share.
Medical share.
Premium share, how's that? Yeah.
Isn't it to his advantage to take a pay reduction of $75 a month and then have that just have 100% coverage? He'd have a better tax advantage. It'd be totally.
We have a Section 125 plan for that premium that they use. They can sign up for that. Most do.
Okay, for extra amounts.
So
they want to pull out.
So, you know.
But if you're reducing
your overall salary, now you know that has repercussions farther down the line.
Retirement benefits.
You're going to say reduction plan, the Section 125 salary reduction plan. That's exactly
that
what it does.
Because you're pulling out before tax.
Pre-tax. So theoretically, you'll get less Social Security payments when you are eligible. You know, maybe that much less.
Gotcha. Okay. But you're supposed to use that money wisely. Councilperson Zimmerman?
Well, I was going to mention, is there any incentive wellness program that you've explored that you could add to this? Membership in Thrive Fitness or 24-Hour Fitness or something like that.
AWC has a wellness program that had offered a 3% discount, was it two on Regents. It was kind of labor-intensive. Linda has started looking into it, and then that kind of fell by the wayside. And so Sam has re-upped that now that we've figured out he's, you know, got all this available spare time. and he's frowning right now.
Sit back and relax.
We've
Tim to relook at that, because it's like a lot of things, it's not giantly extensive for the employee. It's extensive for the reporting agency to justify all the things the employees have done. And so it's you know, it's a little bit of labor, but we don't really care if we.
But is the bottom? It might mean less premiums to the city if we have employees.
Well, it was 2% of region. Is it 2% on?
No, it's a 2% overall reduction annually in our payments to the EWC for our coverage.
Which if we have some kind of a health wellness.
We need
program.
A wellness program. It's a point based system.
Like a non-smoking discount.
Customers, Goodrich, are you had one or no?
I'm pondering. I'm just not sure how changing insurance companies is kind of working with because of the contract. I know when I worked for Edison, they would just come out and say, "Here's what you got to choose from, like it or lump it." And you know, and I know we changed from Blue Cross to Blue Shield, and then a couple of years later we changed back to something else. And so there was, you didn't know from year to year what company was going to provide the insurance. We just got to pick, you know, our deductible or whatever we wanted to do within that. We don't have that option to say to the people, this is the company that we're going with, and
it's a negotiated benefit. That's why different unions in the city have different medical and dental and vision. Some of them fall under the Teamsters. Some of them don't qualify for the Teamsters for medical, for dental or vision. And there are a few different medical plans offered by the state, and they do differ not only in premiums but differ in coverages. Even on the dental side, the orthodontics on one might be a little different than the orthodontics on another. And so individually, the employees are not able to pick which one they want. As a group, they negotiate. So if they've negotiated years ago that they have X company, it's during the negotiation period that you can say, well, how about Y? And if Y isn't as good as X, they have little reason to say, okay. And so that's why up until recently we had what's considered 100% benefit coverage, whereby the city paid all of the premium. So if the city's paying all of the premium, the employees naturally would like to have the best coverage possible. Now that we've added in the monthly premium cost share with the employees, that's softened the blow somewhat. But they still prefer the coverage that they've negotiated over time, assuming that it's better than the alternatives. That's why we're trying to offer actually a financial incentive for them to say, I realize that group health might have a pool of doctors that I have to go to versus Regents, where you could just, you know, blindly put your finger in the phone book, and if they still had phone books, to find a doctor. But so we're trying to figure out a way to make it worthwhile for the employees to switch, so it'll be a benefit to the employee as well as a benefit to the city.
That's Mr. Metzler.
So it sounds to me if we do this, it's about maybe 130, 40, 50 bucks in their pocket a month when all is said and done. What is the downside to them? Why would they?
The downside, and it's, I'm sure it's individual, but it could be that someone has a doctor that they've used for years who might not be in the group health pool. Or it could be that they might have particular medical issues that Regents has better coverage for that medical condition than Regents, than group health might have. I'm sure it's going to be an individual choice. As the mayor mentioned, Sam did put together a comparison, a side-by-side comparison between group health and Regents, so you can kind of find your malady and then see what the differences in the coverage and the limits are between the two. So everyone can hopefully sit down and individually decide for their particular family what might be the better coverage and then weigh the financial benefits.
Mr. Zimmerman?
Well, it brings up the question of pre-existing condition. There was no problem with that right off the bat between the
yeah,
two companies?
They changed that law, what, 3 years ago?
Yeah, good.
It used to be a real...
Any issue swapping.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be certain size groups, and also they'd take your sickies.
Yeah, exactly. So that's something that we are working on kind of in the background. It doesn't affect our 2012 budget directly from the standpoint that even Councilmember Hansen talked about. It might not be an enduring savings year after year after year, and we might not get total buy-in, or we may get a fairly sizable amount that wish to switch. So we're just going to have to continue to negotiate with the machinists and then find out from the Teamsters and the Guild whether they're interested in having this opener on their contract. But we'll keep you informed.
Okay, Mark, back to your show.
That's all I've got.
Okay, Council, do you want to discuss budget cards or direction to Council? I know there's some people in the audience that want to maybe talk about one of the budget cards. Open for that?
Yep.
Okay. Who have you spoken as your first person up? Poor Frank got pointed to. Welcome, sir. Name and address.
My name is Frank Ordway, and I live at 3230 West 51st Vista in Ferndale, Washington. And I am the president of the board of the Ferndale Service Cooperative and Community Service Cooperative, excuse me. And I believe you all have received our letter requesting support for our services. And I can answer any questions about the letter or the co-op or our board or our activities or strategic plans and efforts for the future that might help you in that difficult decision.
Any questions for Frank or Councilor Zimmerman?
Yeah, Frank.
Please.
I've been following this for a few years, and it's always exciting to see that more grants might be applied for. And it's a long chase of these. And I say I'm supportive of this just because I know it takes a consistent person in there following the whole process. You got to hit it just at the right time. And I was looking for you for any positive signs that this is
going to happen. I've been on the board for a year, 9 months, around there. And so we've gone, the organization has received grants in the past for services, but it lacked the strategic planning effort to really turn those opportunities into ongoing operating support. And when I joined the board, there was some board turnover at that time, but we were able to keep the services going, in particular supporting our sponsored programs that serve, over 8,500 individuals in this city a year. And we have a pretty good handle on where we want to go. We've restocked the board with people that are dedicated to this work and are both volunteering their personal time and lending their professional experience to this. I come to this board with 25 years of nonprofit experience, so I know the the ins and outs and the travails of pursuing grant funding as an ongoing support. And it's going to be key for our organization to not only pursue those grants ongoing, but also to look to other ways here in the community to round out our fundraising to keep things going. And for us, it's not so much about fundraising for the service cooperative per se, but having that staffer there who can make sure those services are being delivered and to support our programs that we sponsor to make sure that they can continue to do the work that they do. And at $7,000, what we're hoping is we can combine that with the additional dollars that we have to get us through 2012 with a person in that seat, and the grant prospects that we have and the other fundraising opportunities that we have, we'll be able to actually bring those to fruition, which is very difficult to do now with just volunteer help.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Would you remind Council what various ministries, I use the word ministries, services that are under the umbrella of the cooperative?
The community meal, the other bank, the community friendship garden, the Holiday Giving Store, and the Community Resource Center are all organizations that are underneath our 501c3 umbrella. And so we provide each one of those organizations fiscal support in terms of doing their accounting work and those kinds of things so they can continue to qualify for their nonprofit status, for people who give to them to get their tax breaks and those kinds of things. And then we've held a series of meetings with the program coordinators of each one of those programs to talk about what additionally can the service cooperative do to support them. And so we are talking about both helping them with grant writing for their individual programs, as well as when you combine the service numbers of all these organizations underneath the umbrella of the service cooperative, you end up with a fairly compelling number in terms of thousands of people in a city of our size that these programs serve. And so that approach to fundraising in terms of raising money underneath an umbrella that we could then distribute to our programs directly is something that we have not done in the past. And that's what we're poised to do with the support.
Zimmerman?
Frank and Lucy, it seems like the number of meetings I went to over the years, that they've, you got English as a second language and all these financial literacy, a lot of state. I mean, that little shop back here, it runs a lot of different state organizations that aren't 501c3s, but yet it becomes the hub of where people can go for their supermarket-type shopping for the situation they're in. So.
And I don't think...
And you don't mention those, but it seems like you should.
Yeah, we do an immense amount of resource and referral. And so when we're talking about 50 or 60 families a month that come in the door looking for help, for each one of those people that we help, that means that, I mean, they're in desperate situations. Uh-huh. They don't walk into a door, they're looking for help just because they're having a bad afternoon. I mean, they come in, they're looking for food and a place to live and simple services for their kids. And when we're able to help them and connect them to the services that keep them out of trouble or making a more desperate situation, you all know that we're saving the community
now,
valuable resources.
Involved. Also, domestic violence mm-hmm. group in there. And there's,
yep.
I mean, just there seems like there, you could...
And I think, you know, to be honest, we could probably do a better job, not of working with them. We work very well with them on a programmatic level, but I think as on the board level that we can do a better job of connecting with the organizations
right.
that provide those services. And, you know, the Opportunity Council being a countywide thing, we can probably do a better job of garnering some additional operating resources from them for the work that we do here.
Okay, any more questions for Frank? Customers in Ingram?
So, Frank, the Ferndale Food Bank is not under your umbrella.
No, it is not.
Interesting. I don't know why I thought they were.
I'm not sure. And, you know, part of our long-term plan is to look for and help foster other community organizations. Because if you try to form your own 501c3 board, it's a complicated, it's a legal process. You have to meet a very high bar, which is worthy because it's, you know, you get tax breaks and all the rest of it. But what we want to do is help find other organizations that are burgeoning here and help them grow their capacity as organizations to provide the valuable services like the other ones and that are in the portfolio now.
Councilperson Hansen?
My comments are in no way to be construed that I don't support the fine work you're doing. I want to back up, I believe, about 8 or 9 years when, and I can't remember which one was first. It was either the Senior Citizen Center or the Ferndale Food Bank came to the council and asked for a grant at that time, and I believe it's still about that, of around $3,000. I did not support that. I took a lot of political flack for that. I didn't support it because I didn't feel that there were two reasons. One, I felt that the city's role was not in the charity business. That just wasn't our role, whether it was the senior center or the food bank, I don't remember. And I said to the council decided not to support that particular activity, you wait, someone else is going to be here next year. And sure enough, next year, it was either the food bank or the senior citizen center came in and the grant was granted at that time. And my comment again was, you wait, in the future, somebody's going to be here. Now, I guess the question I have is, where does it end? You've asked for over double the amount that we give to the food bank and the amount that we give to the Senior Citizen Center. And I know I see Pete sitting here tonight, who's the president of the Senior Citizen Center. I'm sure a really, really strong argument could be made to up the senior citizens allocation from 3,000 to 7,000. Food bank could certainly make the same argument. And I think it's just a matter of time before the Boys and Girls Club, another great organization in this community, is going to be knocking on our door saying our budget's short. And there's a ton of other very good charities out there. I don't know how to pick among them. And having said that, I would suggest to this council that if you are going to approve this, be very, very careful about how much you approve, knowing that you already have two other organizations that, well, I've heard, at least I've heard the Senior Citizen Center in the past come and ask that their allotment be increased, and we've always held the line at $3,000. And I believe that's the figure now, is it not, Mark?
$4,500.
No, it's gone up to $4,500. Okay. So, and what about Food Bank?
$3,600.
Okay. So they started out at three. And so my point being, this at 7,000, this will be the strongest support. And I don't know where, I personally don't know, at what point it's going to end. It's not going to end. There will be additional requests.
Customer Smutler?
And I was going to add Team Court and Center for Economic Vitality, and Mark knows the numbers, but somewhere in that same ballpark.
Right? Team Court, 2250. Domestic Violence Services of Whatcom County, 2700.
Center, 5,000?
Yeah, I'm trying to find them.
CED, 5,000.
Yeah, five grand. Yeah.
Down from originally started out 2 years ago, nine.
So not to try to out-conservative my colleague across the aisle there, which is a very conservative position that you just articulated, one could say, if we're doing these already, why not this one? Since this one directly helps the poor. The other, the senior center, God bless them. I snuck in there the other day, had pancakes. Wonderful. But not necessarily the poorest among us all the time. Some of them are, I know. So how do we say no to this one, since we're vested in an interest in that we're camping out right over here, they're occupying Ferndale over here, and say yes to
the councilperson answer was saying no. He was just wary of the
I know. I'm just teasing him a little bit, too.
Councilperson Malpezzi?
Another thing I think we need to should consider is they're coming to us and asking us for the 7,000. These other groups are not coming to us and asking us for an increase. They've identified a specific purpose, which they need to hire a full-time or a part-time, full-time person. They need an extra 7,000 to have this. These other organizations have, you know, their staffing level at a maybe not an ideal place, but it's somewhere where they can function. This group is essentially telling us they're not going to be able to function in the future without, you know, this additional funding. So I would hope that, you know, any time a group such as this would come to us, we would at least seriously consider, you know, the need for it. And I think they've done a really good job to identify a good need for the 7,000.
Yeah, I would debate your statement that the other groups haven't come. They have constantly come and asked for more, and we have consistently said, here's what you're getting the same as last year. So every one of those organizations have certainly come. And I know the senior center would like to speak, but, yeah, that's not true that they haven't asked for more.
Well, I guess I should have specified come before the council. And I don't know what you and the administration have consistently told them, but they have not come before this body in this form as, you know, these decision cards. So that's what I meant by it.
Councilperson Hansen?
Well, all I'll say to that is open the door. Invite them, give them the idea that they can come. They'll be here, guaranteed.
Well, you heard from, you know, Suzanne Nevins, you know, a couple weeks ago. I want to quickly kind of get some other chance from people to speak.
Okay.
Thank you all very much
for your public service.
Thank you.
Quickly before you go on, it's my duty as a mayor, because all the regional mayors, we spent lots of time on the phone last week. You should be aware of the governor's proposal. The governor is facing a giant emergency on her plate. One of her salvos was eliminate school buses for children. The one that would affect the city of Ferndale is basically she would take away all funds from state liquor stores. There's still a question if she could take the sales tax and our percentage of profit. Both those are about $60,000 each. If she was successful in both, it would mean a $121,000 reduction in our budget. As you can believe, every mayor in the state went into kind of a freak-out mode for a while. Nobody has that. Don't know what would happen in our budget. Don't know what we'd do. Still to be determined, but certainly adds to the stress level. Lloyd, you had your hand up.
I was going to do things. In today's paper, the poverty levels went from 16% of the population to 18.2%. That was in today's Bellingham Herald. So, I mean, the need is greater than ever. And I see this tied in with law enforcement and public safety, because all of a sudden things start going wrong. People start getting hungry and desperate. And I think it's a good prevention on that aspect of it. And also Kelly Linville, you know, last year she was here, and she said, hey, this is what's coming down. And this was last year. She said there's a lot of cuts in state programs, just like you've laid out, Mr. Mayor, that things are really tough and we can't rely on the state or the county to do a lot of things. We're finding that the people that we have here, we have to deal with some fashion, whether it be picking them up in a police car and hauling them in for three hots and a cot, or, you know, working through the system that we best we can.
Okay, looking at the time, because I know we wanted to discuss the Traffic Improvement Board, but, I mean, I'm thinking that's going to take longer.
Yeah.
I'd like to kind of maybe move that as an agenda item and discuss that. Because we're fighting time, and I know some other people want to talk about budget.
I'll support that.
They could use the comment period, but could we add it to the agenda, C2, right after the line? All I'm going to do is...
How about D2?
Oh,
after
okay,
the presentation.
Okay. So D2, traffic improvement, transportation benefit. Okay. So we have, we want to go. We have 10 more minutes, and I think some audience members still wanted to speak onto the budget. So open to the audience. 10 more minutes for audience comment on budget. Now, and remember, if you don't get called for, we'll have the open comment period before the council. You can do some things. So don't panic if we don't get you in the 10 minutes. So. First hand up was the Reverend. Welcome.
Reverend Ferguson, 5606 First Avenue, Ferndale. Well, I am continuously surprised when comments like, oh, dear, the governor, yes, is saying, gee, you know, we don't have money here, we don't have enough that here, we don't have to get there. I've been saying this for years. I'm going, is anybody home? Doesn't anybody see this is nothing new? It's a daily progression of this downward economic spiral. So I say, as far as increasing tax, increasing anything, I think it would be unconscionable to increase any of our fees, taxes, and anything else you can name. And considering that I, as a pensioner, have not had any increase in a couple of years. They say they're going to give us an increase, but they're also adding to Social Security, so we're not going to get anything. And yet members of this board have received enormous 16 and 17% increases in their salaries. I have no idea how you can justify that. So.
Customer Sinopezzi?
I just want to make one clarifying comment. I think you're talking about city employees. Not us up here.
Oh, no. Not the council.
We didn't. Okay. All right. Absolutely. You said board. I just wanted to clarify that.
Sorry. Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Lucy, I think you had your hand up. Welcome.
Hi. I'm Lucy Morris. I live at 2501 Mountain View Road. And I just wanted to make one brief comment, which is that the request that the service cooperative is making is a one-time request. The point of the request is to have an employee to hire somebody for 1 year at a part-time position, and so we can offer a position. Otherwise, we're offering basically a six-month position to someone, which is really difficult to do. And part of that person's job is to fundraise for his or her own position. And with the city council support, that gives granting agencies and donors a sense of validation that this is a community-supported organization that is living, that's ongoing, that is supported by a wide variety of organizations. The other parts of the funding for this position is coming as seed funds from the community foundation, the Baucom Community Foundation. And if the city council chooses to also add into that, it's a body. You are a body. You are part of the community. And this is a community-building organization. It's not just services. So I just want you to know that it brings people together. And if you have any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer.
Councilperson Goodrich, Councilperson Hansen, and we're fighting time.
Real quick, when we were talking about the food bank, all of a sudden your hand went up to answer Councilmember Ingram's question of why the food bank is.
They were a 501c3 before we were. That was my response to that.
Councilperson Hansen?
Well, if I heard you correctly, this is a one-time only, so we should not expect this to be back in front of us in a year.
We would sure hope not. I mean, I promise. What do you say, Frank? Well, promise it, yeah.
There was a politician that said, no.
Are we recording this?
Read my lips. I didn't have
read those lips.
I mean, how... That is our intention.
Okay.
That is our intention.
You can ask.
Thanks. Chief Neff, where do you go? 5 minutes? Can you do it? 5 minutes? Okay. 5 minutes. You're on. Your clock starts now.
Good evening. This is on the emergency operation.
Yeah, the decision card, and I told them you had had comments about that, so you have 5 minutes of comments. Less than that, actually.
We have moved forward, as you know, in building a state-of-the-art emergency response facility in the new police station, as well as providing through federal funding a state-of-the-art communications background platform for the continuation of business in the event of a catastrophic electrical or communications failure. We put those two items together, the facility and this communications platform, and we're ready to do business except for the third part. And the third part is the plan. And the plan is one that stresses the mobilization, the coordination, the training, and the assignment of resources and people to man this communications platform in the EOC so that we can respond to the needs of our citizens in this city under a number of different emergencies, both man-made and natural. We have the opportunity through Mike Chaplin to have a plan designed. I had a plan designed when I was the chief of police in the city of Medina before I came here, and we paid $85,000 for that plan. Mike Chaplin, who has just completed the inoperability plan for communications for this county, has offered to provide us with a complete emergency operation plan for $5,000. It seems on the merits to be a matter that should be considered as an essential third leg to this stool of emergency management. We have the first two, and this third element would allow us then to implement the overall plan for emergency response in this city. Mike Chaplin has proved himself, in fact, in designing the inoperability communication plan. It has now been adopted by the state of Washington as a model. So I think we will probably see a similar stellar product when he puts together our EOC plan.
Okay, quick questions, because we're 5:53, so quick questions. Councilperson Ingram?
Comment, not a question. To show the necessity of a plan like this, 2 years ago at Ski to Sea, the van was parked down at Hovander Park. We had a problem. Went over to the van. In fact, I believe it was you that went over to the van. Asked the two officers that were manning the van, get a hold of the patrol car down on the corner of Vanderyat and Maine, and tell them to turn these people around. They're coming the wrong way, and they didn't know how to get a hold of the officer. So training is essential in something like this, or the whole system fails.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Since this is related to our new facilities, could we finance that through our, we have a surplus funding for that. We think we have a surplus funding for our facilities. Could we use those funds?
Contingency funds.
Yes, it's not a capital expense. We floated the bonds for capital.
Okay, any more questions for Chief Knapp? No? Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to call a break. We'll start again at 6 p.m. People want to talk. You'll still get a chance to talk. We'll do on the open comment period. I'll do hands up. We'll let you talk. And if anybody wants to talk, we'll get you up. So plan your comments.
Mayor,
wait until 6 o'clock.
Mayor,
yes.
I suspect that some of these folks are here for the public hearing. It might remind them that there is a sign-up sheet for the public hearing.
Correct. I think this one was pretty easy. Yeah, yeah. Okay, you know, the reserve gold.
Okay, you got less than half a minute. Get close now. Okay, we're coming close. Where's that much ago?
I brought some. I didn't pick up.
Okay, come on, come on, come on. I hate being late. I'll please rise.
Please turn that thing off.
Join me in the salute to our flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. Okay, our clerk can now take our roll call.
Here.
Councilmember Hanson.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Lester.
Here.
Here.
Here. All present count for it. Thank you, Council. Okay, now is the public comment period we talked about before. Is I have a couple people on the list, so we'll call out those people. And anyone else, I'll just look around the audience. Anyone else can raise your hand. Come, speak your name. Your address is optional. Thank you. And try to limit your comments to 3 minutes. We're not terribly strict on that. And you can talk on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. So we have one person, former city official. Welcome, Mr. Peter Hartzell. You're up first.
Thank you. I didn't know you were that old, but no. I'm here representing the senior center down in the park, and we are asking for you folks to look at contributing a fair bit more than you have been. And I have handouts for all the council persons, and we know things are tight, and we know it's tight because we have a lot of senior citizens coming down for their lunches. They come down to just to be able to go someplace because they can afford to come downtown. We have pretty close to 400 members, and so I will pass this. You want me to pass them out, or should I just get them going around? There you go. As you can see, I gave you a second sheet that shows what other cities are contributing. And so when you look at that and then you start looking at your monies, I know everything's tight, but consider the fact that the Ferndale City should at least step up and try to be somewhere near what your sister cities are doing. We have a number of people here from the Senior Center, and I won't bother reading this because it's a well-written document in my estimation. So thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Hartzell? Okay, seeing none. Thank you, sir. Okay, thank you for coming. Okay, next. And I have people on the public hearing for the property tax levy, but this is public comment, so if you want to talk anything else, I'm looking for hands up right now. Welcome.
Good evening. I'm Sean Hagstead from Haven Design Workshop, and my address is 3410 Alder Grove Road, Ferndale, Washington. And regarding the consent agenda, the ERU ordinance, what I want to talk to is there isn't a provision, from what I could tell, for multifamily. And I think there should be a consideration, something to look at for multifamily, probably over fourplex, because there's a lot of opportunity there for water and sewer savings, both for the developer and for the city, if there's a way of basically encouraging them to use low fixture facilities in order to reduce the water count for those items. And I think that's an important piece that might be missing, where we have a commercial, really good commercial portion of it. But multifamily, if you have a 70-unit complex, there's a significant savings if you encourage them to reduce their water use. And I think that's something to consider when you guys are considering that portion.
Yuri?
I had the opportunity to talk with Mr. Hegstead on Friday about this.
Basically, as the council knows, for commercial and industrial users that come in, they have the opportunity to provide documentation that their business will use less water or sewer than what we project in our calculations. And if they are able to demonstrate that, then, of course, if they are able to follow through with that, they could have a reduction in their connection fee charges. For single-family residential, which depends so much on the individual user, it's so much more difficult to calculate. But with multifamily development, Mr. Hegstead is suggesting more than four dwelling units. I would suggest more than 10 dwelling units. You can build in certain efficiencies into those units to then have less water and sewer usage. After talking to Sean on Friday, though, I looked through the ordinance, and it does not prohibit the Public Works Director from considering that for such users, for multifamily users. What it does do, however, is, as written, it removes the possibility of there being a refund if they actually use less than even they projected. At this time, I do not believe that there is necessarily a change that would need to be made, but more a recognition that if a developer came in and was proposing increased efficiencies, that the Public Works Director could look at that and make her determination at that point.
Okay. Councilperson Mutchler? I might do an apples and oranges things, but previous to this ordinance, wasn't it like 50% for multifamily for some of those hookup fees?
Previously, if there was multifamily within the city's core, they could have approximately a 45% discount. This would actually move the discount closer to about 50%, just because it reduces down the calculation a little bit more. So this does make it cheaper overall for multifamily.
Our current ordinance, as we just passed or adopted today, in the consent.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So he's looking for more than 50% savings on the multifamily.
If the applicant could demonstrate that a multifamily development actually uses less than what we expect them to, based on that, then they could see an even more reduction.
Gotcha. Well, that would seem fair.
You know, I'm just crazy about things that are just implied. And so you're the planning director. The employees hate when I make this statement. You're the planning director now. You know what the implication is. You get in a car wreck, you're not the planning director tomorrow. Everyone else goes by the wayside. That implied idea you had is floating in space. So why can't you just put some detail behind it? You know how I hate those just floating in air.
Mm-hmm. Right now, the way that the language reads is there's nothing that says not this type of development. So if there was language that said with the exception of this sort of development, then I would think it would be hanging more in space. Right now, it does not limit that. What we could do to provide certainty is say, developments with the exclusion of single-family residential shall be eligible for these considerations.
Okay.
And so if council wished to do that, I'm looking at the clerk.
The idea would be is if you do that, the council could make a motion to pull out consent. We could easily make that change tonight. That would be the lean procedure.
That's what I was.
Person Goodrich?
Well, I was wondering if that's all we need to do, if we actually need to pull it out completely and bring it back at the next council meeting.
Sounds like a pretty minor change.
Just in my.
Okay,
Councilperson Mazzetti. Mr. Hegstead, what was your thinking behind the four versus the 10 where Yori was talking about? Why four trigger, not 10 or six?
I think the trigger is there is areas of development within the Ferndale area where four is pretty easy. It's just an easy development, straightforward. Talking with Yori also, single family has pretty defined. I mean, you could have a two-bedroom house, you could have a five-bedroom house. There's some variances in there. Within the multifamily, I think, I know four units is multifamily, but I think anything above that is actually something where you're efforting and you're having a significant effect on your development. I think you are saying, okay, you need more than four or more than five in this case to get that effect to be viable. And one of the parts that you were talking about as far as a location has a lot to do with it too. Within the core, yes, you get that big reduction. If you're beyond that core, you don't have nearly the same effect. So a project that I've been looking at on La Bounty, it's way outside that boundary. And so you don't get any of these additional savings. You only have the ones that would be achieved by this.
Councilperson Ingram?
Yeah, I'd like to remove the ERU ordinance from the consent agenda, please.
Second.
Okay, move to second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, so we're off. We'll pull that off. Okay, back to, thank you, Sean. And by the way, Sean's a member of our Eagle Board, and so servicing our city well. So thank you for your concerns. Okay, public comment period, we're still open. Hands up, anyone would like to come forward? The Reverend? Don't be shy. Okay. We haven't bid anybody in a while.
Reverend Ferguson, 5606 First Avenue, Ferndale. To begin with, I am the ultimate environmentalist conservationist. And I dutifully wash all of my recyclables. And I was just thinking a couple of weeks ago, the amount of water that I use washing my recyclables, they get the money from the stuff that I contribute to them. I even have to pay them to pick it up. They earn the money, but it's costing me a whole bunch of water, and I'm really quite serious. It just dawned on me, I said, wait a minute, because I'm a really clean person, washing, washing, washing. I think something needs to be picked up on one end or the other. Either, you know, stop charging us for what they pick up or reduce the water rates, not increase them. Something's got to give. It's like all the burden is on us to do this stuff. So I wish somebody would think about that.
It is, I'll jump in because I think we should be proud of this endeavor. A lot of people maybe miss the point that the PUD, the Public Utility District, we draw our water out of the Nooksack now, and so we buy water from the Public Utility District. A year ago, we got a presentation from the PUD that showed price increase of 25% a year, 25% a year, 25% a year, 25% a year. That's 100% 4 years if you're doing Ferndale math. And so we panicked and said, I don't know if you'd be popular standing up here going, oh, 100% increase. So we made the decision to reactivate our well water. We hope to be drinking better tasting Ferndale well water by, I'm committing to my public works director, who doesn't want to give me a date.
By the end of December.
So I hope that will stabilize because we will control our water destiny. Now, I don't want people to get the bad impression of the Public Utility District. Ferndale was a small customer there. Their main customers are the refineries and Intalco, and they had to do different things to our water because it's potable water, drinkable water. And so I think they were somewhat happy to go, great, go away. We're going to sell all our water to bigger customers. But so the city has made a chance to try to stabilize water. Reduction, mumble, mumble.
Right. Somebody told me that when we were on our own wells that they were getting a lot of sulfur. You know anything about that?
Back in the old days? Yeah, that was, and we didn't have the Douglas well. So the Douglas well is pure artesian, so way better well. And then we have one well on top of Fort and then one at the city shop. So far, the wells we've shown that are the city's wells that we're using now don't show sulfur. They do have some filtration, but it's I totally believe we did taste tests. I think the citizens will notice different tasting water. I hope so.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any more? Hands up. Welcome, sir.
Roger Inger, 2065 Kiwi Drive. And this is the first time I spoke. It'd probably be the last. But anyway, for the senior center, the city has come up with a couple $100,000 for a river walk, millions for a new police station, red and paper that they were even talking about hoping to have a community pool. What about us? You know? What are we, chopped liver? You know, I mean, we pay the same taxes, and we support you people. We vote for you. So it's just, you know, if you can find it in your heart, we do need help, and lots of it.
Questions for Ms. Fagler?
Well, I don't expect you to know the answer, but maybe Pete knows the answer. Does the Whatcom County Council contribute any money towards the building, and if so, how much?
Council, or the Parks Department, as they're called, they provide the building, they provide the gas that heats the building, they pay for the electricity and the maintenance and repair. The manager that we have is outside of these figures that are on here, because we contracted with the County Parks Department to be able to get the money that they were hoping to save and use it for our manager. And at the end of 2012, who knows? We're hoping that things will straighten up and they might get back on board and decide to take it back upon themselves. But
so do they give an annual contribution?
Cash-wise?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, thank you.
They keep the building up, though.
Okay, further comments from the audience? No? Seeing none? No singing? No. Okay. No, it's a private joke. Going public, more on the time. Okay, on the consent agenda, with removing the one item, Councilperson Ingram?
I move to adopt the consent agenda as amended.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Further discussion? Seeing none. Councilperson Zimmerman.
Well, I thought I attended the business license late fee thing, and what was decided on that? Was it a decision made that we were going to maintain that? The doubling of it?
Yep.
It's the same structure. It's just the timeline for the fee is different.
Send the minutes.
I'm sending out four notice warnings to everyone. It's not here. That's the only change. There's no change in the monetary.
Okay. It's time fine. Okay, thank you.
And you ought to see our new application. It's quite frankly.
Should
okay,
have brought one.
That's a story in itself. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Okay, next up, the Lions Club proclamation.
Well, we got the...
No, we're going to do that.
That's D2.
D2.
ERU.
D2.
Yeah, we never decided where to put that.
Oh, excuse me.
D3
correct.
Or something?
D3, correct. Okay, so Yuri, you want to read back what you feel is the language we want to add to the ERU?
Sure. We have two chapters. One of them is 13.08.140. The other, 13.20.100, identical language. All proposed development shall be eligible for consideration of independent fee calculations, with the exception of single-family residential units and multifamily development of less than, I'm proposing, 10 units total.
Okay, motion to approve staff language addition to the ERU.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Further discussion? Seeing none. All in favor, signify.
Wait. Okay. You're proposing 10 units total or in excess of 10 units?
Of less than 10 units total. So 10 units would be eligible for the consideration. 10 units and above would be eligible.
11 and above.
Okay. 10 or above of less than 10 units.
Okay,
less than. Yeah.
Further discussion, Councilperson Mutchler?
And Yuri, why not 5 and above? Make the case.
The larger you get, the more you can take advantage of economies of scale. I'm not an expert in where those efficiencies actually come in, whether it's 5 units or 10 units. 10 units is a nice round number, and it represents a more substantial multifamily development than just 4.
If a developer thinks that he's saving at 4 or 5, is there a downside to us if he's able to prove it?
I
may not be able to.
I can't speak to that. Yeah.
Based on the testimony of Sean, I just assume how it would be above 4, 5 and above.
Councilperson Malpezzi?
I'd like to amend the main motion to strike 10 and replace it with 5.
Second.
Okay, moving seconded.
Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, voting on the amendment to go to 5. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, that motion carries. On the main motion amended to that, further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Okay, good job, Council. Okay, next one, the Mayor Proclamation for the Lions Club International. Mayor Proclamation, whereas Lions Club International, founded in the United States by Melvin Jones on June 7, 1917, is the world's largest service club organization with more than 44,500 clubs in 205 countries. Whereas the 1.35 million members of the Lions International have dedicated themselves to the motto of "We serve by supporting worthy causes and humanitarian projects worldwide." Whereas the Ferndale Lions Club supports a number of local and international projects, including those relating to the preservation of sight and hearing and the prevention and treatment of diabetes. Whereas the Ferndale Lions Club promotes the goals of other community organizations, including the Ferndale Cub Scout, PAC 4026, and the Whatcom County Domestic Violence Commission. Whereas the Ferndale Lions Club provides a financial and volunteer support of the White Cane Days to raise funds for sight projects of the Northwest Lions Foundation, the Mobile Sight and Hearing Screening Program for detecting potential health risks such as high blood pressure, diabetes, and glaucoma, Camp Horizon for the summertime enjoyment of those with special needs, and the Peace Poster Contest for encouraging awareness in middle schools of the importance of peace among all nations and people. Whereas the Ferndale Lions Club, chartered on October 26, 1941, is celebrating its 70th anniversary of service to the greater Ferndale community. Now, therefore, I, Gary Jensen, Mayor, City of Ferndale, do hereby recognize the Ferndale Lions Club for its 7 decades of service to this community and thank its members on behalf of the entire city. So thank you to the Lions Club. Okay, next up is the Wind Power Northwest presentation. We have some guests that will come forward. Welcome, welcome.
My name is Paul Maurer. I'm with Groupon Enterprises, and we have State Representative Joe Hinkle, who would like to give a state of the state on alternative energy. It's going to take me just a second.
And I'm Ted Thomas with Northwest Wind Power.
Okay, great. Bill, this is the city of Ferndale. Waiting for the state of the state on alternative energy.
So it's my turn.
Yes.
All right. Mayor Jensen and honorable council members, for the record, my name is Bill Hinkle, and I'm just by way of testimony, I am in fairness here. I am a state legislator. I represent the 13th district. Some of you may remember me from the, I'm the last president of the Municipal Research Council that is now defunct. So very familiar with city government through those connections. I want to talk real quickly, if I can. I'm here on behalf of, in my personal capacity, in East Mission Consulting, LLC, which I've been doing for about 9 years. Representing Groupon Enterprises and Northwest Wind Power. For the record, I reside at 311 Anderson Lane, Clay Island, Washington, 99-22. I don't think it's any news to you that we have a serious energy issue, and to that end, the state has, back in 2010, passed and gross substitute House Bill 2658 that would direct us in a comprehensive energy planning process, and hopefully by the end of this year, come up with a driving a clean energy economy and jobs through business and workforce development, as well as meet the state's obligation to reduce greenhouse gases. We have some tremendous opportunities in the state here with net metering benefits, sales and use tax benefits for those that invest in those things. Even back as far as 2009, we did the Evergreen Jobs Initiative with the goal of creating 15,000 green jobs by 2020. We can argue about green jobs, we can argue about global warming and carbon footprints, but the reality is that every government, small and large, are dealing with these things, and it's the right thing to do to increase our carbon footprint. Now, I just want to mention that I think given these things, it's important that we understand the need for energy independence. And we can look at managing our future needs locally, or we can try to rely on developing that infrastructure out in the big world. In the real world, I can tell you right now, it takes 10 years to develop transmission line across the state. I've worked on it before. It's very difficult. It's cumbersome and it's costly. And in the end, I think as a city, you are positioned in a tremendous tremendous opportunity to really control your future a little bit, your future cost for power. Again, transmission costs are crazy right now when it comes to time and effort. Your initial output for dollars and developing other resources are really difficult. But today you can be involved in a project that will give you benefits to your community that are both real and measurable today. I mean, I think that's an important thing. I've been working on a large wind power project over here with another client. It's a 200 megawatt project, and one of the questions that always comes up with these larger programs is, what is the benefit to the community? How do we win? And I can tell you that a lot of that power gets sold down south of California, other states where they have higher energy portfolio requirements. We here, I think they'll have the opportunity where you don't have a lot of wind, but also you want to participate in the green energy benefits to actually step up and say, okay, here's an opportunity for us. Again, these are real and measurable in real time benefits that you can see, I think, as a city. And I would recommend these for your serious consideration and be ready for any questions if you have them. Although two guys with you are a lot smarter than me.
Any questions from council? I think you can speak in your microphone. We can probably project.
Can you hear Bill?
I can hear. Did you hear me fine?
Yeah, you're coming clear.
Yeah, very, very good.
Council, any questions? Or?
Well, the questions I have are just specifics as far as the money, the rebates, the tax credits, all those financing things. We'll get those.
Okay. Councilperson Goodrich?
My question goes to some of the things you said about in the state. How is our power generated? Because I know at one time a lot of it was coming from hydro, but I don't know today what the breakdown is when you talk about renewable resources and things like that.
Okay, well, what I know is I think about 90% of our power in the state is hydro. Closer to 10% is actually nuclear. There's nuclear power we have in the state when it's up and running. I'm not sure if the power is up and running again over there in Hanford. I can tell you the problem with the large generation plants, though, is that when it comes to wind and solar, is managing an intermittent source. And that's where the net metering and the distributed energy projects that are local, with their smaller impact on the system, don't require development of new transmission lines, don't require huge issues as far as, managing 200 megawatts into the system that comes and goes, if you follow me. So I think there's a tremendous benefit to the domestic development of renewables, and that's where the Powerball fits so well into. I hope I answered your question.
I think we have another question.
Mr. Hinkle, thank you for doing a lot of the support work on that state level. Now, could you outline the amount that, I mean, municipalities in a special position and the state legislature put them that way as far as the rebate or their payback on these machines?
I didn't quite quite hear the question.
The payback on the machines.
There's an increased. You can buy this as a homeowner, but we as a municipality, if we were to purchase this, you've even sweetened the deal for cities.
That's a good idea. That's a good proposal that maybe Bill, you should look into. Sweetening the deal for cities to benefit for small distributive wind or distributive projects such as this.
Well, I thought it was already existing, so I wanted to clarify that.
Well, anything over 100 kilowatts goes into utility-grade power generation, so you approach it contractually the same way you would a larger project.
So the net metering doesn't happen with smaller entities like we're proposing?
If you have multiple meters, and we can tie into multiple meters, it has to be under 100 kilowatts. Avoid that, so.
I don't know if everyone can hear me, but do I need to repeat that whole thing?
No.
Yeah, I heard you.
Okay.
Okay. I guess that qualifies my question.
Okay. Any other questions? Well, Bill, thank you very much.
All right.
We escaped him. It didn't work this time, unfortunately. So,
it worked on the practice session.
Ted from Northwest Wind Power. Ted from Northwest Wind Power is just going to explain a little bit about the technicalities in the energy ball, which is what we just handed out.
Yeah. Bill's a hard act to follow. He's one of our cheerleaders. He's a good supporter. We've actually had quite a bit of support in Washington State for the energy ball. The Governor Gregoire was... helped us with the Washington Aerospace Training Center. That was a grant that we were awarded, and we just got another Snohomish County grant for the Future Flight Museum. So five energy balls are being installed all at the same location on the rooftop of the Future Flight Museum, as well as the first off-grid EV charging station in the world will be in the parking lot of the Future Flight Museum, powered by solar and the energy ball. So you, everyone has a handout in case those of you who did not get an opportunity to see the energy ball in action on the MUPS, the mobile utility power station, down the street by the parking lot.
Go back. The previous slide.
The energy ball has a very unique profile for harnessing wind and converting it to kinetic energy to power generation. So the blades, the shape of the blades, and the twisting of the blades actually create a Venturi effect. And those of you who are down at the other location where the MUPS is may have noticed that when the wind came in at 6 or 7 miles an hour, it continued to spin even though it was 2 miles an hour, because it built up that low pressure zone on the inside of the ball. So it just gives it, that's the most unique feature of the energy ball, and the fact that it's very, very quiet. The new blade design has created a double output on the energy ball, which has been verified and tested at the University of Washington Wind Tunnel. This is a standard design for a monopole installation. It goes into a foundation. It's a very simple design. Easy to do, basically a 6x6 or a 7x7 pad with some anchor bolts and two levels of a rebar grid, number five bar. So generally we have the pole on the ground, we assemble the turbine, and then a crane erects the pole onto the pad. This is our three-phase inverter specifications. These inverters are UL listed, and you can go through this. A lot of it is it talks about the noise and all the other stuff. I think that's the wrong page anyway. So the energy ball, some of the specs, it's a 2,500-watt turbine is what it's rated at. The manufacturer has rated cut-in wind speed, which is the definition for when it starts generating power. Survival wind speed is 90 miles an hour. That is conditioned upon the connections in engineering. We've actually seen it. It's actually marine rated and can withstand up to 125 miles per hour.
And we've sold 3,000 of these to the country of Japan. I'm the exclusive distributor for Japan. And that's one of the key reasons they chose this product over other products, was because of the ability to withstand, you know, gale force winds and tsunami winds, that kind of thing. So you got a rotor diameter 6.5 feet. The whole thing weighs about 320 pounds. You've got 42 square feet. That's a little mistake. It is a permanent magnet generator with 12 poles, and it produces three-phase AC. So when it's coming down to the down the wire, down the cord, it goes into our inverter, and the inverter phases it correctly for 60 hertz and 110 or 120 volts for interconnection into the grid. Go all the way down. So the standard warranty for a residential installation is 5 years. We are proposing at least a 10-year warranty for a project with the city, or for at least the length of term of whatever financing mechanism that we decide to go with, or the council decides on anyway. So, again, these are UL-listed inverters, and we've been installing a lot of them here in Washington State. It's the only turbine that Seattle will allow within the city limits because of the noise ordinance. It complies with the noise ordinance. So what else can I say? The Energy Bowl has been around for 9 years. It's only been here about 3.5 years in the United States. We're always the last ones to get the good stuff. I'll give an example. I mean, Japan has got technology that basically doesn't use any power. They got flat screen TVs that use like 15 amps. I mean, it's just nutty. And we still don't have that. So this product here has been around Europe and 65 different countries for over 9 years. And so I guess the production incentives and the green movement kind of help move the product along, and it's about time too. So this is a sound level human response. It was pulled off a engineering study that was done by the state of California, and it kind of tells you at what the decibel ratings are at various, you know, what a bird call is, and a refrigerator at 10 feet. So the Energy Ball is right at where a refrigerator is, at 10 feet away, or 20 miles an hour.
I think to everyone in the audience, the sound that you hear coming through the vents is louder now than when we stood over there and listened to the demonstration one.
Yes, you and I are talking around 75 to 80 decibels, or maybe even louder than that.
Amazingly quiet.
So, I generally talk loud because I lost my hearing in the Navy. My office was just below the flight deck on the aircraft carrier. So what do we have here? What are we looking at? Oh, kind of a cost comparison. So the Energy Bowl is involved in the Ellensburg Small Wind Project. We were actually the first one that they chose, and then they decided to go ahead and bring in. They got additional DOE funding. So they thought it would be fun to go ahead and add a bunch of other technologies to compare. That facility will also be used as the testing facility for the AWIA testing for our SWCC certification here in Washington State. Does anyone have any questions?
Question, Goodrich. If the city were supposed to do something, what are we looking at as a payback time frame on this, or can you even look at that saying
cost recovery
for something like this? Versus
I'm going to turn this over to Paul. Paul is our investor on this project. We originally had another project that we were looking at doing, and it didn't go together because of permitting. And this is kind of a unique opportunity, and then I'll turn over to Paul, because the only reason that this pencils out and makes sense at this juncture in time is because of the Section 1603 grants. So Those expire at the end of the year, December 31st. And so Paul and I discussed it, and I introduced him to Greg, and we thought it would be a great idea to try and Greg explained to me, you know, what the goals of the city were, and we thought it would be a great idea with and match the goals of the city to be self-sustainable, to try and, you know, take care of your own power needs, and which eventually will drive down your costs for your power generation, especially if you're going to be pumping water out of the ground. That's, you know, I think you're going to be paying a lot more than 8 cents a kilowatt hour because of the demand. You're going to be hitting a certain demand. I don't know if anyone's done any calculations on that, but I know farmers that are paying $350,000 to $400,000 a year on, you know, less water than you're going to be pumping. So I'll turn it over to Paul, and he can talk about some of the numbers.
Yes, thank you very much. Paul Maurer, Santa Monica, California. Not a local here, but I am here to definitely ask you to joint venture with me. This was a company I sold. This was IC Care. I sold that recently. And the reason why I sold it is I have a construction project out of Silverdale. We're trying to make a prime development where most of the homes either don't have anybody behind them or anybody in front of them. It's an 80-acre development, 151 homes. We tried to put the windmills here, but we didn't have wind. We're trying to make an exemplary, sustainable, wonderful community there. There's more open space than there are homes there. And I just want to show you really quick where my heart is. This is my nonprofit organization. It's called Forests Are Forever. We're trying to show the poor farmers in the rainforest how to make more money underneath the canopy of the trees rather than cutting the trees down and planting grass for cows or any other type of monoculture. So this is really what I'm trying to do. So I'm trying to save money to do this. So the government allows us in just 2011 what's called bonus depreciation, which is accelerated depreciation where you can write off 100% of whatever you put in service in 2011. So I can take advantage of that with the windmills, plus the government gives me a 30% grant. So what I am doing is a nonprofit gift to the city and actually taking less of a loss than I would have paying my taxes and using a lot of the grant monies to give you the following proposal. How it's going to work is really four simple steps. Number one, the city enters into an agreement to lease these turbines, lease these windmills from Group Comp Enterprises at a fixed rate, around $12,150 a month. That's a fixed rate. Number two, Northwest Wind Power delivers a 10-year warranty to make sure that – did I say 10-year lease? I meant to say 10-year lease. So we have a 10-year lease of the turbines. The supplier gives us a 10-year warranty. I need to lease that small area where the turbines are. So the city gives me a lease for a 200 by 200 foot, like if we were going to do it in Bender Park, which is ideal. It's already cleared. It's readily accessible. So I would need a lease of just that little area to lease that from you. And then when the lease expires, I donate the turbines to the city. How it works further is like this. If we enter into a lease, if the city of Ferndale leases the turbines from Group Comp Enterprises, we sign the lease, I bring all the equipment up here. All the equipment is up here. I put it in the ground at my expense. Once it's done and running, I give you $500,000 in fees, or we got to work it out how it's going to be. But then I give you $500,000. What that does is takes out every single risk idea that you might have. That more than doubles the output that these machines are going to give.
It's a reserve account, so.
Yeah, I mean, you could. I don't want to call it a bond. Yeah, I'd rather call it a fee, to tell you the truth. Yeah, you could use it as a reserve account. You could spend it. I mean, it's not up to me. It's up to you. But this would be something that I'm, again, this is under my cost, but I'm sharing the bonus depreciation and the 30% grant with you. Now, what's the hitch? The hitch is we need to start before the end of the year. So we would need to get a lease going within the next couple of weeks and start figuring out exactly where they're going to go, exactly how we're going to work this. But that's the only hitch.
So it's very important to think about independence. It's very important to think about green energy. There's a couple of things that we don't know. We don't know what your energy bill is going to be. You know, we all can imagine it's going to go higher. We don't know what how much more power that you're going to need. I'm trying to put in really conservative estimates in here of what the energy ball will produce. And using those estimates, we're thinking that the payback, if you want to call it a payback, is about 16 and a half years. So it's a 16 and a half year. If you figure that the lease payments are going towards 8 cents of energy, which is very small, then at what you're going to be paying net after 10 years, which is about 528 grand, you'll be making more than that in lease payments. However, I'm giving you $500,000. So if you figure out what your total cost is, it's about 528,000, which at 8 cents a kilowatt, and what these are producing conservatively, it's about a 16 and a half year payback.
I'd like to add, there's some additional information that Paul was not aware of when he prepared this, and that was an RFP from Puget Sound Energy. So I think there's a high possibility of getting more than 8 cents a kilowatt hour for selling a power packet. If you include the renewable energy credits, the RECs, it's probably closer to 11 or 12 cents a kilowatt hour. So that would significantly reduce your power generation, your ROI, you know, probably down the 10-year range. Additionally, we had some solar panels that we were going to actually throw in the mix, probably 25 kilowatts, something like that. And that's also not reflected in the, it's an additional 45,000 kilowatts a year for that. So I'll turn it back to Paul.
Yeah. Any other questions? Or
Mr. Bauer, just if we could interject a question for our treasurer. Mark, what are we paying on an annual basis? I know it's a lot for the power, for the water and sewer pumps.
Let me look that
okay.
up for you.
Wait, Paul?
Councilperson Ingram?
Well, I've got several questions and concerns. You came up and surveyed my house, so you know I'm 100% behind the energy ball because I wanted to put one there.
Yeah. For the record, that's true.
So, would I lie? But I don't know that you are aware of the selected site that you've got in Bender Park. That site has been approved by this city council, and the reason it's flat and bare is we are having a meeting next Friday night, a public meeting. That is Ferndale's Veterans Memorial Park.
Yeah, Mr. Young.
That's about a $3 million project, and I don't know that I'd want 80 of these things in the middle of my Veterans Park.
Yes, Mr. Young sent me a proposed where the park was going to be. This is going to be just in front of where you have the water tower and the...
That's our parking lot.
Well, what I saw was to the left was going to be the park.
The park takes up that whole slope all the way down to the fence line.
Mm-hmm.
The main memorial part of it is right in the middle. And the park right behind the...
We can decide where to put this. It also could go at the sewer, your water treatment plant.
Yeah, you get better wind up on the hill. I'd like to see it worked in up there.
Okay.
I'm not saying that I would vote against this just because you've chosen that site, because that's probably the best site in Ferndale for consistent wind. Okay. I think it's not something we can't work out. I just want you to be aware that that park is planned for
that.
Okay. My other question is this. Have you ever built an array of this size anywhere else in the world?
No.
What have you got in the way of information on ultra-low frequency or intra-frequency harmonics when you've got 80 of these things going in one spot and every one of them is pointing a subtly bit different vector because of subtleties in wind direction and wind layering, and I can go on for hours on wind layering. What experience have you got? What are the harmonics between these things? The air coming off this set of blades spinning 2 miles an hour slower than the air coming off of this set of blades 10 feet away from it. And then those blades, and those blades, and those blades, and those blades. Because I'm a long-distance shooter. I can assure you that in that 200 feet from one end of that field to the other, the blades at the front end of the field and the blades at the back end of the field are likely going to be spinning 180 degrees opposite from each other. The winds shift that much. You know that. So what does that do to harmonics? And what does that do to the sound level? Because that's my concern, friends, is that we put this many of these things in a confined, in a relatively restricted area. Are we going to create a siren? I mean, if we don't have any data on this, it's a concern to me because we're next to a school. Is every dog in my neighborhood going to go straight up in the sky? If we don't know the answers, we need to scramble around and find somebody that does, because the big wind turbines and big wind farms, people say, well, those things don't really make any noise. Go stand out there and feel them. They are making noise. You just can't hear it. So it's a concern to me about where's the technology in here, and where's the research on a big array?
But we have we've done some studies for putting 20 of them in an array, but not 70 or 80, and they're not going to be all next to each other. I mean, they're going to be spread out. I put in a request. What I'm going to do is answer the question. So what we've done is sent out a request to our sound engineers to answer this question. So I've given them the information on the terrain, which is important, and so they will get back to us and give us an indication from whatever direction you're standing, from the distance of that direction. What would be the likely harmonics or sound decibel rating? And so, and we would provide that. That's part of our engineering studying package that we provide to the city.
And we'll have that soon, I hope.
Very soon. Okay. You'll have it this week. And
I don't want anybody to miss it. I'm 100% in favor of these.
So, in the interest of time, because we do have quite an agenda, sure. Council, why don't you give as you all have your questions, and then obviously you don't have the answers today. But he's promised to get back to you. So, let's do the questions, and then he can come back with actual facts and figures.
Right.
So, any other questions from council that you would like to approach these gentlemen with, Customer Zimmerman?
Well, Mr. Mayor, I was going to ask you, because about a year ago, the Small Cities Group got together, and the Opportunity Council got $850,000, I believe. They had this renewable energy grant that they
got. Correct.
Oh, the REAP? You're talking about the REAP?
It was a special grant that the Opportunity Council had for this county for municipal projects, and I'm thinking this might be one that fit right into it.
Yeah,
just an additional source of funding for us. Again, I don't know what the numbers would be. But also, is your plan that they all need to go in one location, or can they kind of be...
They do not have to go in one location. The city is a customer. The city can choose where they go. It's just important that they produce power, so... Obviously, that needs to be windy.
I guess the other question I had, can it be on paper that there is an obligation? They don't have to be all installed by January 1.
No, but we have to have a lease.
Have
signed.
An agreement. And,
yes,
okay.
Yes.
We need 5% completed. 5% of the project has to commence prior to the end of the year. And that's under the Safe Harbor program. There's two applications. One is the actual application. The other one is the Safe Harbor application where 5% has to be completed.
I'm sure Greg will take care of all that. So.
Is it feasible to get that with the weather and stuff coming up to get the 5% done by the end of the year?
Oh, yeah.
We have
a
contract.
Yeah. We can move pretty quick. Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions from council?
Good presentation. Thank you.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Is there a place we could – you mentioned you've got groups – 20 in certain localities.
It's not in this state. We're hoping to have we've got several projects. We have some high-rise projects. Newmark Towers is putting 14 on their tower.
So this is a place we could get on a car and go take a look.
Is there a website that you can get? Boom, 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 boom.
When they're up, they'll not only will we have a website, we'll have a webcam, so you'll actually be able to see that on the website.
Yeah. And would. Just one more real quick thing. Would you be able to put one, somewhere around the treatment plant or Pioneer Park or somewhere where we could put one of those really cool, the one you just came out with, the tower for charging your electric car? And
At a little bit of an extra cost, yes.
Yeah, it would, yeah.
Would
sure.
you like that?
Sure, absolutely. We can do whatever you want to do. We have Ecotality or some other. There's some. I have a friend who is actually in charge of giving those away to cities and municipalities.
We'll take one for free.
So I'll let him know that
off the grid,
city
recharging
Fernando
your
would
car,
like to request
I love it.
One. Yeah. I'll put him in touch with the treasurer or
Tesla.
Or
yeah, Tesla.
Mr. Young.
Okay, and if you have any more questions or you think of them later, get them to the city. We will get them to these gentlemen. We want answers.
Will we rapidly. See them again at a committee meeting or something?
We're going to transfer this to the very next committee meeting because time is the clock is ticking.
Thank you.
Thank
you,
Mr. Maurer.
Thank you very much. Okay, next up is the D2, the Transportation Benefit District. I'll wait for Sam to get caught up because we'll move our public works director to the podium.
I thought you were done.
One more.
Oh, can't you give a PDC without a stupid PowerPoint?
Let's buy you some sunglasses.
Let the record reflect we don't think the Transportation Improvement District is a dumb idea.
That'd be great. All right.
Okay, Council, we're back here.
Good evening. I'm Janice Marlenka, Public Works Director. Yeah, and when I'm talking street needs, need to show pictures. And up on the screen is actually a picture of Portal Way, and it is one of our kind of our number one concerns, and we'll be keeping a close eye on that through the winter, and trying to hold that road together. Now, on the Transportation Benefit District, we talked a little bit about that at the Public Works and Utilities Committee, and then also Greg brought it. City Administrator brought it up at the Finance Committee. And the Transportation Benefit District is a quasi-municipal corporation and independent taxing district created for the purpose of funding transportation improvements within a district. And I'll refer to it as the TBD Board, has several revenue options, and some of those are subject to voter approval. It's created by an ordinance, and on here the corporation would be the city council members, and the independent taxing district, what we would be recommending is that would be the city limits. So to form a TBD, the first step is you have to publish a notice of public hearing, you have to hold a public hearing, and then you have to adopt an ordinance that creates that TBD. And in that ordinance, you, as listed up there, you have a finding that the creation of the TBD must be in the public's interest, define the boundaries of the TBD, which would be the city limits, and then you go into details about the functions and powers of the TBD, and then also a description of the transportation improvements proposed by the TBD. And what we're recommending on that, on the proposed improvements, I'll pass these around. You've seen these before when we were talking about the Finney gas tax. And I think I've got about 20 copies. Here's our list of our street preservation projects. This list, we put this together in 2010. It has not been updated yet. It's something that we'll need to go through and do, but this would be, we would use this to prepare our list of projects. We would start from this. And then we would put something together similar to the city of Spokane, where they go through and they map all the locations of the projects on a map so everyone can clearly see where the projects are at, what's being proposed. And then we would have an individual sheet that details the project, project type, cost, when the work would be completed. So it'd be very detailed so we would know exactly what work would be completed under the TBD. Okay. On the revenue options that the City Council has to consider, on the voter approval, the there's the property tax, and then there's also the, you can go up to 0.2% sales and use tax, and then there's a $20 card tab. Yeah, $20 you can is non-voter approval, but above that, then it has to go to the voters. Okay, for the voter, yeah, just like I stated, for the on the voter, non-voter approval is a $20 tab, or there's also the transportation impact fees on commercial and industrial buildings, not including residential. And we provided one example. This shows if we, council considers a $20 card tab, we went through and estimated total number of households and said average of two cars per household with a $20 card tab. In 2012, we were just looking at a half a year. We would bring in about $80,000. And then for the full year, then double that, so $160,000 that would be put towards street maintenance and preservation projects. Yeah. Some of the benefits, and this year we were pretty much like focusing on the $20 card tab, is that there's a clear nexus between the user group, drivers and vehicles, and the use of the roadway network. By setting up a TBD and having funds available for street maintenance and preservation, then we would be relying on the a little bit less on the general fund. There would be less funds transferred to the street fund to cover those repair costs. And then also, you know, we would have a dedicated funding source for that street preservation, maintenance, and reconstruction so that we could actually establish programs and be able to do, you know, a certain amount of work per year, you know, under those programs and complete projects. And then on the last note there is on the $20 car tab, the vehicle license fee program is administered by the Washington State Department of Licensing. So they oversee it and then send the funding directly then to the city. Okay, so next step, seeking direction from the council to proceed forward with the development of the draft ordinance and project list.
Okay, committee voted to move this forward to council for general discussion. So obviously some people want to discuss this. That's great. I saw first hand up was Councilperson Goodrich.
I like the idea of the district.
Are we done? Thanks, Brett.
I have two questions. One is for our treasurer. If we create a transportation district and we put roads into that, if I understand it right, we designate roads to be in that district, can we use other sales tax dollars that might come in? Can those be funneled into the district, or how does that?
Yes.
I know we're talking about raising the sales tax. You know, the option is raising the sales tax at 2/10, but other sales tax could be diverted.
Yes.
Okay.
You can supplement that.
My other question is, in the $20 car tab, somebody brought this to my attention in discussing it this weekend. We have a lot of businesses in town that have fleets of vehicles, taxi cab company and Baron has it, plumbers have it, Ferndale Ready Mix. Is there a way to exclude fleets from this tab? I think this could be a big impact on some businesses.
Not that I know of, how to exclude that.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. They don't use the roads? It's based on vehicle registration, mm-hmm. Not only zip code, but it is within the city limits within that zip code. So that part might be a little problematic, but I don't know how to exclude it. Based on registration.
Yeah, the concept naturally is that, you know, the cars use the roads, the cars degrade the roads, the cars pay for the repair of the roads. So I think whether it's one car or a fleet, the legislature has not, you know, differentiated between those two. I think because of that cause and effect logic behind the whole program.
Councilperson Ingram?
I think you were first, weren't you? I think he was first.
Okay, we'll go with Councilperson Zimmerman first, and then we'll go to Ingram, and then I'll continue down the line.
Janice, what other communities are doing this?
I had a list of them, but I just didn't bring it with me tonight. A
couple off the top of your head that you might recall?
Bellingham.
Well, the city of Spokane, Seattle.
Bellingham.
Shoreline or Edmonds, Everett.
Bellingham.
Point Roberts. Yeah, so, I mean, the list, it's pretty long.
Now, each of those communities did different options mm-hmm. on your funding.
Right. There's a majority of those went with a $20 car tab, but some with the sales tax.
And Bellingham is the 2% sales mm-hmm. tax. Okay. Councilperson Ingram.
Correct. Bellingham did 0.2% on their sales tax. And everybody I've talked to around town that has bent my ear on this issue, that's the way they're in favor of it. Simply because it would put us at a parity sales tax-wise with Bellingham. Our people go to Bellingham to shop 80% of them anyway. They're already paying that sales tax rate, so it wouldn't impact them as much. Just don't forget, these car tabs are not car tabs. They're license tabs. So you've got 5. I've got 4. You've got 4. You've got 4? 3? 3? I mean, so... Because I've got a car, a truck, a motorcycle, and a trailer. That's 4 tabs. You've got 10. So, I mean, it can impact certain families and, you know, immensely. If they've got multiple vehicles, you can be up well over $100 in a hurry. And the sales tax, it seems to spread it out a little more uniformly, and it doesn't seem to be quite such a slap in the wallet at the end of the year.
Yeah, I was going to say, it might be, if indeed the 0.2 sales tax is of interest, it might be interesting, to, given our current level of sales tax, to maybe try to figure out how much that would generate versus the...
$300,000.
Yeah, yes. $300,000. Or ask the finance.
How much on the $20 car tabs?
$160,000.
So more through the 0.2. Sales. I was going to bring that up only because... from talking with Burke Associates about the planned action EIS, I believe they're going to be proposing a transportation benefit district with the 0.2 sales tax as the revenue source, but that's predicated on the planned action EIS with the big box stores and the transportation improvement costs linked to that. So I think it could be said that right now, if we were to do it, we would generate $300,000 or so that could go towards the program that our public works director is talking about.
So my follow-up question to that is, how long would it take us? That has to be approved by the voters. What's the time frame on that?
The quickest ballot amendment.
April?
We'd have to have it by December, and the vote would be in February for a special election.
Okay, but could we do that?
We are currently on the – yeah, we have to have it approved and sent to the auditor's office by December. Okay. I think December 30th.
Is that – has the district been set there?
In line. He was
it's
first.
Fine. It's related. You can let
okay.
him go.
All right, I'll go to Councilperson Hansen.
You already had recognized me.
I recognize you, but I recognize him first.
Is that the date of the school district election?
Yes, the majority of school district levies are always in February.
But they also have the option of going in March, so we don't know for sure yet whether, because it would make sense, then we share the cost of the election.
Well, I'll go back to the politeness thing, and Councilperson Malpezzi had his hand up a considerable time ago.
It's all good. Yeah, I'm definitely not in favor of the car tap thing. It's just another tax we're trying to impose on people. This is a priority decision of where we're spending our money, and we made the decision a couple years ago to stop funding our streets and sidewalks programs for spend money somewhere else, and now the money's gone, and we're trying to find some more money to spend. We need to stop spending money. That's my take on it. That's what it comes down to. I'm more in favor of the sales tax, but clearly not the car tabs. $20 a vehicle. We need to stop spending our money. Let's wait till we get some more in.
Councilperson Hansen, microphone.
Right here.
I know.
As you know, the Bellingham Transportation District was formed and the lead item was Sunday service for WTA, and that has occurred, but only about a third of the dollars that are collected in Bellingham are actually going to the Sunday service for WTA. The other two-thirds go to roads. My personal preference is also the two-tenth sales tax over the $20 car tab fee. There's a huge undercurrent about car tab fees. People are, you hear them constantly. I thought we voted for a $30 car tab fee. My last car tab fee was $45. I don't know what happened to the $30 car tab fee, but it's already gone. And mine would be then $65 with this. We need a very clear top priority list. This is way too expensive. It needs to have five or six really needed, really obvious projects that we would tackle in this priority list, and that's what you go out and campaign on for the two-tenth sales tax. And I believe we would get it. People's number one concern when you go out and talk to folks about what do you think the city should be tackling is roads and sidewalks. So I think we can pass it, provided we approach the election properly. And part of that is that priority list.
Mm-hmm. Councilperson Ingram?
No, I was just going to – Sam, am I right that if the voters approve a 0.2% sales tax increase, that has a 10-year sunset?
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, council, further comments? Discussion? Councilperson Goodrich?
It may have been stated, but I'm not running it 100% tonight. I'm fighting, I think, the cold that Sam has brought around to all of us or some other people at work.
Yeah, you look great.
One night of nights. What is our time frame? Do we have to make this a decision to go with? I know we have to create the transportation board,
right.
But for the election and...
Yeah, the it always has to be, I think it's 45, we have to deliver to the county 45 days before the election, the ballot measure. So we would need to, in December, pass the ballot measure, the wording of the ballot measure, to send it on to the county. But we can, and you alluded to this, we can form the transportation benefit district right away. It will exist, but it won't be funded until and unless the voters were to approve, in this case, the two-tenths.
So did I hear right that the next election is in February?
So in December we've
or
seen
maybe
the,
March.
Or March.
Maybe March, but probably February.
Yeah. Probably February, yeah. So we could, at the next meeting or so, form the district, and then in December actually formulate the ballot measure and send it to the county for the February election, if that's the date we so desire.
I like that idea.
Councilperson Ingram and then Zimmerman.
Well, in the interest of making everything run smoothly as possible in the limited amount of time we have, I would like to make a motion tonight that we direct staff to form a transportation benefit district.
So the first step will be to publish a notice of
notice of public hearing?
Yes,
okay.
Schedule the public hearing.
And let's get that scheduled for next agenda. Do we have room on the next agenda, Sam?
I would need a second on that.
No.
Okay. So it's been moved and seconded by Councilperson Hansen, who's way away from his microphone, but we still heard that. Councilperson Zimmerman?
Janice, you stated that you thought the boundary should be the city limits.
And all roads, all streets would be eligible for the funding rather than just a specific area.
Well, what about the urban growth boundaries? Would that make sense at all?
I was only looking at city limits, not the urban growth area, because we don't have those. Those streets are not under our jurisdiction now. It's the county.
Yeah, and we also don't have really much sales tax being generated.
Okay, so this is just you're collecting the sales tax from inside that zone.
Yes.
So anything outside it?
Yes.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Councilperson Mutchler.
What is the current sales tax in Bellingham and the county in Ferndale?
Eight point seven versus 8.9.
Ferndale's 8.7.
Mm-hmm.
County is 8.
Ferndale's 8.5.
No, Ferndale's 8.5.
Are we?
Bellingham's 8.7.
I'm sorry.
I don't know who is 8.9, but it's not anybody in
Seattle.
Is.
Yeah.
So what,
yeah.
what was the answer?
No,
8.5 in Ferndale. 8.7 in Bellingham.
Bellingham's 8.7.
And the county, is?
8.5.
I think the county's 8.5.
Whatcom County's 8.5.
I wanted to just comment on it. Councilmember Hansen said that if your list of projects is too narrow, you give more people reason not to vote for it. I don't use that street. I'm not near there.
Right. I think one of the issues may be not so much providing the electorate with that monster list, but rather for us to spend a little bit of time and we can do this and cull it down so we could say definitively, in 2013, we want to do this. In 2014, we want to do this. Give them kind of that short frame, knowledge of what projects are going to be done. And then for those that are interested, we could also have that longer list saying that we're going to start working through the list.
Mm-hmm. And it could be a 0.1%. It doesn't have to be 0.2.
True.
Thank
true.
You.
It could be, yes, up to 0.2%.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Well, help me out here, Mark. It was you got the money, you got the tax money when it was spent there, but then all of a sudden we had this place of origination or your zip code or something, the money goes back to that.
Destination
sales tax, okay? So this would be above and beyond that, or that doesn't conflict, or I'm just trying to what's the formula for this?
It doesn't conflict.
Well, okay. I guess the explanation would be the person that buys the couch from Samuels and it's delivered to the house in Bellingham is paying 8.7. The person that buys their couch at Samuels and delivers to the house in Ferndale is paying 8.5.
Okay.
It's destination. It's where the product is
delivered.
Right.
So that 2 cents, 0.2% goes to Bellingham, not us in that
right.
situation.
Right. So, yeah,
the whole 8.7 goes to Bellingham.
Right. So all the taxable sales that Ferndale gets will go from 8.5 to 8.7. So our tax stream will simply be increased by that 0.2%. In this case, about $300,000.
Councilperson Hansen.
And what's interesting is I bought a refrigerator in Bellingham just 2 weeks ago to be delivered in Ferndale, and they charged me 8.7. I reminded them that that was incorrect, and they changed it. But the invoice had 8.7 until I told them. Because, that's what our sales tax rate is.
Sure.
That's right.
Very good. Councilperson Ingram.
So I'm wondering, was my motion kind of out of line? Because my motion was that we direct staff to create the transportation.
Correct. This is further discussion on that motion.
Okay, but was that motion even correct? Or should we just direct staff to go ahead?
No, your motion is entirely correct.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. The next meeting, my intention is to bring you the formation ordinance and, if possible, the ballot issue wording. I mean,
good.
There's no reason why we need to drag it into two meetings.
Nope.
Just take care of it next time.
Okay.
Yeah, public hearing.
Okay.
On the ordinance.
Further discussion. Councilperson Malpezzi.
Yeah, I'd like to wait till we hear what the public has to think before we create it, but
it'll be a public hearing.
Okay, so this is just for the public. I thought we were creating the district right now.
No.
You're informing the staff to form the district, and then they would schedule a public hearing, and it would be a public
formulate
hearing.
Formulate the district.
Formulate.
Yeah, all right, not form. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Yep.
Any other discussion from council? Okay, all in favor of Councilperson Ingram's motion, I think we all understand it. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion carries 6-0.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Public Works Director. Okay, public hearing on the 2012 property tax ordinance. Staff will discuss first before we open the public hearing. That would be you.
Good evening, Council. Before you, in your packet, are some options on the tab E, the property tax ordinance for 2012. I believe we have three versions of this in here. Yes, we do. Page 99, page 100, page 101. First one is 0% property tax increase. The next one is 1%. And the next one is 2%. 1% will yield about $21,000, rounded $20,788, about $21,000. Previously, as your treasurer, I've shared some of the cost increases we have under contract. Some of the unions and the large number of folks, the office and the public works field staff are getting 3.5% wage increase next year per contract. Medical insurance, the gross amount of impact just on the general fund by those increases was close to $70,000. Now, you heard earlier during the budget session administration's efforts to suggest we open, invite the various unions to open the contracts, talk about a shift to a group health premium, which is a lot lower than the Regents plan that we get from AWC, and some incentives there. If everyone signed up for group health, we'd save about $62,000. So a lot of costs, as you know, are going up. Fire district, I'm planning 3% increase, and I hope it's only 3%. So we've gone 2 years with 0% increase in property tax. The administration recommendation is a 1%, bring in about $21,000. That would actually balance out our current general fund, about $2,000 or $3,000 positive. Real skinny. Any questions?
Okay, questions for staff, and then we have a list of people that would like to speak on the public hearing portion. So questions for staff. Councilperson Hansen.
Well, it's just a clarification because everyone keeps using this. A 1% increase in property tax, that's not what it is. It is a 1% increase in the amount of money the city collects for its budget. The effect of a 1% increase is approximately 0.1% increase in the property tax.
Yeah, I'm just going to add to that. You've seen the chart on the for what might be considered the average home, that is a home valued at $250,000. The 1% increase represents about, I think it's $4.95 for the year. So, I mean, I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just trying to kind of bring it down to a home level when it comes to the magnitude of increase.
Okay, any more questions for staff before we open the public hearing? Seeing none. Okay, we'll open up the public hearing portion. I do have some people signed up, and then if other people want to talk, basically raise your hands after I do this list, and we'll bring you up. The public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. If you intend to speak, it's necessary to sign at the sign-up sheet. We already have that, so we'll go by on that. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Proceed to the speaker's rostrum on the microphone. Clearly state your name and address if you are speaking as a representative for another person or organization, so state. State whether you are a proponent, opponent, or neither. Limit your comment to 3 minutes. After all comments are heard, if you have something to add that has not already been stated, at the discretion of the mayor, you may be given an additional 2 minutes. There will be no demonstration during or at the conclusion of anyone's presentation. During the public testimony period of the public hearing, the council, staff, and audience will remain silent. After your presentation, council members may wish to ask you questions, so stay at the podium. After the last person has spoken, the hearing will be closed and the council will enter into regular session. The subject of the hearing will usually appear on an agenda item for council discussion, decision, or referral. The audience may not comment during the council deliberations unless questions by the council for clarification. These rules are intended to promote an orderly system of holding a public hearing to give every person an opportunity to be heard and ensure that no individuals are embarrassed by exercising their right to free speech. Okay, so I'll open the public hearing. The first person we have is the Reverend Arlene Ferguson. And I think she left, so I think we kind of know how she feels about it. The next one, I don't really have a signature. I have box 116 written here. So, great. Welcome, sir. And they'll need a we'll just use his address and then just if we can have your name.
Name's Tom Edwards, and live in Ferndale, citizen. Being here tonight kind of reminds me of a TV interview I saw after our federal government spent, I don't know how many billions it was in the stimulus package. They asked this one guy, I said, well, what do you think about them spending all that money for the stimulus package, all the taxpayers' money? And the guy kind of scratched his head and says, that ain't no taxpayers' money. That's the government's money. You can spend as much as you want to. Well, as a taxpayer here, I've been to some of these meetings in Ferndale for these buildings we've built, and they're beautiful and they were necessary. But in all of those meetings, when the economic picture came up, it was told that Ferndale's in good shape financially. We can get good credit, bond rating is good, and so forth. And now, here tonight, with just in a few months later, we're out of money. And we're not talking about the government's money. We're talking about the taxpayers' money. And so I'm quite disappointed because we've heard that we're in good financial shape. Some of you folks that are running for the offices in the voters' pamphlet have stated that we're in good financial shape. And coming here to this meeting tonight shows we're not in great financial shape. So the taxpayers have to pay for it, and I ask for you to take that into consideration. There are a lot of hands out. I see this windmill operation, and from what I've read, alternative energy would fall flat on its face if it weren't for the taxpayers subsidizing it. So go easy on us. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Edwards? Okay, seeing none, thank you.
Okay, and I have Yvonne Goldsmith, but... Look, oh, she is? Okay. Welcome.
Former Council and Mayor.
Good evening, Council. Yvonne Goldsmith, 5840 Church Road. Y'all know what I'm going to say. I'm going to say no new taxes, period. This is a bad time for everybody. And honest to God, I thought I was attending an Amway meeting tonight when y'all were going to have to make a decision right now on 80 windmills. You got to be kidding me. Y'all have been trained. You don't make decisions at the last, at this minute, so some dude can walk out of here with his pockets full and ours empty. So I'm asking you, no new taxes. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I appreciate all that you do.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else from the audience would like to speak? Sir, welcome. Name and address is optional.
My name is Robert Henriksen. I live at 2218 Augustine Drive, Ferndale, Washington. I've been living here since 91, come to a lot of meetings, and this is probably one of the best ones I've seen. Steve, you got my vote. No taxes. If we ain't got the money, don't spend it. That's the way it should be. You want to raise money and all that? Hey, union people for Ferndale, 3.5%. How about me? VA, Social Security. Nothing in the last 3 years. So think about where you spend your money. We cut back on our water bill, you raise the water bill. I know we had a problem a while back with the plant. We got fined by the state. But, you know, you look at our lawns. Beautiful Ferndale during the summer looks like, I don't want to use the word, but it looks terrible. We're all cutting back as civilians, and you are probably too in your household. But, I mean, you know, like she said, this Amway, this thing with the solar thing. We don't even got, if you ain't got the money, don't spend it. Is it a want or a need? And I appreciate every one of you for your time that you serve on the committee, because I know that's a lot of time spent. But just think about it. Times are bad. We can't start any new project if we don't have the money. My wife tells me, I got two race cars at home. Hey, you can't spend any money. You've outspent our monthly income. So I've got to curtail. I've got to sell my toys. And I'm not paying no tags. The tags were supposed to go down, and they're up again. And I agree with everybody else. The sales tax, fine. But Bellingham is a lot bigger city with a larger sales tax. There's a lot more benefits, a lot more cars, a lot more traffic, a lot more businesses. You want to raise the sales tax for a little town of Ferndale? That's ridiculous. Spend wisely what you get in. Revise, review, and cut corners there. Don't come up to the public and ask us to bail out the city. That's all I got to say. Thanks.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah, I will, and I'm sure.
Oh, is there any questions?
No, I'm sure you didn't understand, but anyone coming to the podium, and a great thing for Steve, but you can't come to the podium and say you're going to vote for Mr. C. Legal, but you're okay.
Wait, what?
Oh, you can't come to the podium and say, hey, you got my vote. It's just
no
problem. It's
not
perfectly
a vote.
Okay.
No, I don't even know if he's running for office. I'm just saying.
Oh, okay.
No, I said he's got – I agree with him. It's a way of saying, okay, I salute you.
Great.
I appreciate it.
Is, but that's great. So anyone else from the audience after we got through that? We're okay with it. Okay, anyone from the audience? Okay, council, open discussion. Councilperson Mutchler has his hand up, appears.
Yeah, I'm going to roll a dice here. I thought about this all weekend and listen real carefully. Now, I just simply make a motion tonight that we go with a 0% increase in 20.
Second.
Okay, further discussion. I'll have a discussion because some of the public missed the budget session. But let's make it clear, and this is an odd way to do it, but I think it's an important message that needs to get out, is that before us we have a chance that if all the employees of the city basically go to a different medical plan, and we're going to give them a dollar incentive to switch that medical plan, it's a $62,000 savings to the city of Ferndale. That's significant. As much as these people from the citizens care, I'm hoping our employees care. I'm hoping that maybe a media takes that quote and runs with it, because this is a time where we should all go together, we should care about our city, and $62,000, $62,200 is a lot of money for changing to a medical plan that we think is as equal as the other one. It's a savings to our city, and we'd like to give them a dollar incentive for that. So sorry if I got that statement in there. Okay, so I have a motion and I have a second. Any further discussion on the motion? All in favor for a 0% property tax increase, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Okay. Now, item F, resolution, $5 surcharge and Central City Water Association bills. Treasurer, would you like to explain that, or does anyone have any questions?
I was just going to move that we adopt agenda bill number 1111.
I'll second it.
Okay, so appears everyone understands it. Further discussion on the motion? Sorry, Mark, it's nice that you look good up there.
Customer
Zimmerman?
Well, I think someone might clarify it, because how long does it go on and what the expected outcome after that period of time.
So from the committee, Councilperson Ingram was there, so we'll go with you.
Yeah, that's something I was going to bring up tonight, too, on this ordinance. Section B, right about two-thirds of the way down, I think we should have a year in there. It says they shall be given until July 1. July 1 of what?
2014.
Yeah, maybe. It should have 2012 in there.
So that's clerical.
That's just clerical. Yeah, that's just clerical. That's strictly clerical.
Well, but it's just clerical. Really? Okay. All right. So that you're making a motion for an amendment.
Well, do I have to make a motion for an amendment?
Yeah.
Okay, then I'm making a motion that we amend that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded.
Reflect the year of expiration.
Goodridge to add the year 2012, July 2012.
Right.
Okay.
That gives you
further discussion on the amendment. No discussion on the amendment. Okay. Voting on.
Question. Clarification of some sort.
Okay. Podium, please. Nice to see you again.
Thank you. Good evening. Yvonne Goldsmith, 5840 Church Road. I'm a member of the Central Water Association. What's going on here?
Oh, okay.
Nice that they communicate with you, isn't it?
Let me see if I can.
How many water associations do we have in the city of Ferndale?
I think four. Three or four.
Let me see.
And why just one and not all?
Yeah, let me see if I can do a quick review of that. Because I'm a member that would be affected by this, too, as you are. So Central City basically has their own water association, their own system.
They go around and they hand check their meters, and then they give information to our treasurer. In the past, recently in the past, we've had some problems with that in the fact that their readings have been off, some problems with billing that's taken our time. And it takes our employee more time to manually enter in the information because our city water meters, our city employees go up, touch the lid of the meter, an electronic wand, never removes the lid, and then he brings that electronic wand in, plugs into a computer, and all by computer your water bill is generated with an exact time and when it's read. He doesn't lift the lid, he just touches it. He has to touch, call it touch read, and then that's all automatic. Now, in the downstairs billing department, we've eliminated 3 employees in the last 3 years. So, and part of the mayor's thing is a lean directive is we have to be more efficient in what we're doing at City Hall because we're doing it with less people. Basically, 3 person used to touch that bill, now 1 person. So hand entering information causes our staff more time. We asked the Central City Water Association to consider doing touch read meters. We'd offer to read the meters. They're still exploring that. They're trying which meter works for them. We don't really want the Water Association yet. People have asked that. Go, they have to really fix a lot of things in Central City before the city would like that. Yvonne's shaking her hand because she knows, yes, that's true. We all enjoy our orange-colored water at times in Central City that some of you don't get to enjoy. So that's the idea, is that it's a surcharge on Central City, a $5 flat rate every 2 months, and that will pay for the extra labor that basically the city does. And we hope it's an incentive to push Central City into doing a more efficient system. It certainly would help them if they went touch read, because Greg Herman reads them all, and it would speed his time up too. And then they came and said they needed new meters, but they're still exploring what's the best way to buy new meters, because they do need new meters. So I'll go to Yvonne first.
Just to make some, Yvonne Goldsmith, 5840 Church Road. Whoever read our meter last time read it upside down, and we got charged for a little over 300,000 units. So we were a little excited when we got our bill. So I would like to have an actual read. Accurate red bill. So
I
can understand this. So.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And you were extremely polite. The one that was even bigger that was less than polite. And I think the treasurer and I and our employee probably have about 6-7 hours each into solving the problem, which was just a misread.
Yeah, upside down.
Councilperson Hanson, you had your hand up.
But I was couple of clarifications. Everyone, I hope, understands that it's a sewer. It's not water. Central City has their own billing system for water. The other option, and this was soundly defeated by the other option that was presented to Central City through Karen, was going to flat rate sewer. And that was soundly rejected. It used to be that way when we started accepting the meter readings. So essentially this is a stopgap until Central City can provide us with
new technology.
A software package that interfaces with what we've got, and then it'll go away at that point.
Correct. Other council members' comments? Okay. Seeing none, resolution, it's a $5 surcharge every 2 months.
Second ordinance.
We have an amending
motion. We have an amending motion.
Oh, correct. We're going to vote on the amendment first. All in favor,
say which was what?
Which is
to add the year.
Sorry.
So on the amendment first, all in favor just adding 2012, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Oh, no.
Oh, you do? Okay.
No, great. I had a question on the main motion.
On the
main motion, the billing for the sewer, it's done on a monthly basis or two months?
So this matches up because it matches with our billing. So it's $5 surcharge every 2 months.
All right. When do we take the winter reading and prorate that through the year? Does that not happen?
They didn't like that. Yeah. That applies as well. During the summer months.
Treasurer, microphone.
Sorry.
you're as bad as I am.
System-wide, all 4,200 water customers, we have fewer sewer customers, but the sewer bill in the summer is based on winter average water use. It seems more equitable, more fair. You can water your lawn in the summer. You can water your garden in summer. June 4th to October 4th is the period of summer. Therefore, you only get charged for sewer based on winter water average. So you get a lower sewer bill than you would if there was no such scheme.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Council, further discussion. Okay, the main motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Okay, moving down. Item G, City-County Annexation Interlocal Agreement. Very exciting stuff. I hope our public, our great planner makes it exciting.
Jerk. Good evening, Council. Good evening, Mr. Mayor. Thinking of a way to introduce this to you that would make it a little bit more exciting. If you recall the 2009 urban growth area process, where we worked with the county and the county worked with us, and I think we pretty much failed miserably at that. An interlocal agreement is more or less when you agree to get together to play a game, it's making sure that everybody agrees that you're following the same rules. That way, hopefully, the game will go that much better and you're not going to be arguing about the basic assumptions that are going on. Both the city and the county have language in their comprehensive plans that talk about having an interlocal agreement that guides things such as growth management planning, annexations, and a variety of other things. And we had an interlocal agreement from 1999 to 2009, as did all of the other cities in the county. But in 2009, that expired at about the same time as we were arguing with the county over future growth planning. Since that time, as you may recall, earlier this year when we revised our urban growth area, the cooperation between the city and the county has kind of restored itself. So now there's that mutual trust going on. That was really between Ferndale and Whatcom County. But over the past 6 months to a year, all of the planning directors from all of the cities, as well as the planners from the county, have gotten together at least once per month, usually here at Ferndale, and have talked about how to reconstruct an interlocal agreement. And there have been a lot of debates. There have been some shouting matches. There's been a lot of compromise. But we come to you, as all the other jurisdictions are doing about this time, with a document that we're all recommending would be approved. The process would be that the various cities would look at it and recommend either approval or denial or approval with certain conditions. It would go to the county. The county, with the presumption that the cities are okay with it, would then feel comfortable recommending approval as well. What we are proposing to you is that you have looked this over. We assume that you've looked this over, that you recommend approval or denial with conditions if necessary, with a caveat that after the county looks at it, you would then have another opportunity to look at it in case there are changes made. Obviously, if no changes are made, you could probably put it on a future consent agenda. If there were changes made, then you would need to talk about it. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Councilperson Hansen.
I'm going to move that we accept the interlocal agreement as presented. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Wonderful job.
Yeah, very exciting.
A wonderful job.
I was on the edge of
the audience. Is on there. They're just on there. Very good.
Okay. To a thunderous ovation.
In the interest of time, Mayor reports. The mayor has nothing to report. Council reports. Council reports. Councilperson Mutchler.
I don't often take liberties like this, but my absolute favorite, and it really honestly is my favorite musical, is West Side Story. And it's 50 years old this week. And it's playing one time at the Bellas Fair on Wednesday night. And it really
Bellas Fair?
Bellas Fair, one night, the movie.
I'm sorry.
And I just, public service edit, there's not, there isn't one bad song. Not one bad song.
The original movie.
The original movie.
Yeah. When? Yeah. Wednesday?
Wednesday night.
This Wednesday?
This Wednesday. It's one time to see it on a, the whole thing.
And it's also playing at the Paramount Theater in Seattle in January.
Okay, great. Here we go. Our dates are set. Okay, any other council reports? Councilperson Ingram. You had to, you kind of twittered your hand.
Oh, was I?
Was it was
I
the default.
Was
it's the default.
You were just twittering.
Well, okay, then I'll just say one more day, and I'm sure as heck glad.
Oh, yeah. Second that.
Okay, any other council reports? Okay, seeing none. Staff reports. Treasurer.
Nothing further.
Okay, good. City manager.
Nothing further.
No. Planning department.
No.
Good for you. Public works. Clerk.
No.
Assistant clerk. No. Who's doing a nice job of writing notes. Her notes are very nice. Much more neat than Sam's.
She's a lot better looking, too.
And our police department. No reports. Council, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Oh, that's right.
We got to sign
that's right. All right. Just a second. I got to find my
sheet. We got to sign the students out.
It's not on the agenda. We shouldn't have to have an executive session.
We'll let the students out first. We still have time. I promise I get them out before 8 o'clock. Okay, pursuant to RCW 42.30.110G, we will enter into executive session to review the performance of a public employee. The session will last approximately 30 minutes, and then we'll go back into regular session. So for now, we'll close the regular session, and then we'll have the students, we'll sign them, and then we'll kick everybody out, have our executive session, and we'll come back.
In the ice.
Okay, so we're back in regular session being recorded. Councilperson Hansen.
I move that we accept the salary proposal as presented.
Second. Okay, it's been moved and seconded.
Second.
Discussion. Seeing no? No.
Well, let's see how I want to
phrase it. These have to stay here, right?
Correct. He has the floor.
Yeah. Like I said before, what 24 hours is going to make the difference, and at will, and, you know, you would have a way of running your show next year. I would have a different way of running the show next year. So the idea that this is really, what effect will this have?
Oh, if an election...
I'd like to speak to that.
Yeah, sure, please.
If the election goes that direction, they're still at will. Let them go.
We'd still be making this body would still be making a decision before the end of the year.
Right. And we would be able to...
Well, no, he's correct. Incoming mayor.
Absolutely.
That's what that will mean.
They've done that before, huh?
But would this...
Oh, it was
the first day.
First day.
But hypothetically, because it's all hypothetical anyway... does this decrease Lloyd's ability to negotiate with those employees a different contract if a contract's already been approved by council tonight?
You can renegotiate at any time.
That's the thing about
non-represented.
I guess I'm asking a fair question, too.
No, it's fair.
A possibility of a different mayor, are we limiting his ability to administrate by voting this tonight?
Not a bit.
Because we have to come up with a budget by the end of the year. This body that's sitting here tonight, no matter what happens, you know, we could have an entirely different council here next year, but we're deciding the budget.
Well, and it's those tough decisions of saying, okay, if we say yes, that's why I asked. This was rolled into our package beforehand, before we even saw the rest of these decision cards. You know, we're already starting to gather extra, you know, funding sources, revenue sources, before we even pass this modest 3% increase.
The budget was built on the 3% increase across the board. On all, if you look at the way Mark builds this, it assumes a 3% increase all the way across.
Everybody.
Well, it's not just people.
It's everything.
Paper, it's pencils, it's power.
Chewing gum.
Yeah. Chewing gum?
We buy chewing gum. haven't gotten any chewing gum.
Okay, so a motion and a second?
Yep.
Yeah. Motion and a second. Okay, so any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, so motion carries 5-1.
Move to adjourn.
Okay, move to adjourn.
Aye.
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 Any opposed?
Hey, I'm going to be here all night.